back-to-back meetings the whole day since 6 o'clock this morning. So, be that as it may, we really apologize for the 4 minutes late starting. The agenda of the meeting is as circulated, and I take it that everyone who's at least attending today is well known to members, and those who are presenting are also well known to members. We will not do the round of introduction today. Safe to say that today the aircon is not working, but we have been given some fan, and from where I'm sitting it is making noise. I'm not sure whether indulgence will be granted by members to switch it on and off, because it may interrupt with the free flow of the discussions in the meeting. And if indulgence is granted, I'll order the switching on and off, particularly this side, because it's really disturbing. It's disturbing the minister in particular. And can you take apologies? Comrade Kanyila?
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and good morning. Honorable Makluwa is in another meeting. He may be joining us a bit later today. Thank you.
Honorable Ruas?
Not comrade. Thank you, Chair, I'm covered.
Okay. No, I'm saying this because I got a backlash from Honorable Muela the last time that I did not say comrade to Honorable Kanyil, so I was trying to make up. Okay, Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to apologize for Mr. McKay, the Acting Director General. He's presenting the immigration bill at NETLAC today in Pretoria, and we thought he should go there and come over here, so he won't be attending.
Yeah, thank you very much. There's a note here that I'm requested to convey to members. We have been joined today, I think, by Mr. Phakamile Hlungwane. He's the researcher of the committee. I think he's recently employed. Can he stand up so that members can see? Thank you. Members, is your researcher. So I thought you'd clap hands. So it's like you're not welcoming me. Thank you very much. We are going to take item number 3. And we will give to the minister, and we'll appreciate minister if you can just start by giving us maybe the high level issues that are taking place on the media space. As I was traveling yesterday, I saw that the city of Cape Town, the refugees, and so on. So if we may be just given the latest update on that, so that whenever we respond, we have also the view from the minister around the issue of the refugees in Cape Town. Thank you very much. Over to you, Minister.
Let me just find out. You mean before this, before we come to the BMA, you want the briefing about the ruling yesterday, which is important to the committee, of course. And I appreciate to be given the opportunity. You mean I must start now?
A helicopter view of what is happening, just for the benefit of members. After which you must just zoom into the to the business of the day.
Yes, Chairperson, as we have heard, we've been having this unsavory situation in the church there, first starting at the at the Green Market Square, and which also happened somehow in Pretoria, which was becoming a stalemate. The ruling yesterday is as a result of the city of Cape Town going to court to ask for an interdict that the people who are breaking the bylaws there must be removed. That was the basis of the ruling. Now, Chairperson, I would like to mention that this has always been our position as Home Affairs. We have always been maintaining a position that when people breach bylaws, it should not matter who they are. You don't look at the nationality of a person or their status, whether they are a refugee or not. When they are breaking a bylaws, you take action. I am mentioning this, Chairperson, because last year I wrote a letter to SALGA to complain bitterly about this, because three city councils were avoiding implementing their bylaws and hiding behind Home Affairs. It is the city of Johannesburg. You remember that the former mayor even brought me here to report me to the committee that I'm not doing my work, when I was insisting that this is bylaws. It is the city of Tshwane with a similar thing when people invaded Brook Lane. And then it is the city of Cape Town with this matter. I wrote to SALGA to ask the president, please tell municipalities, bylaws are bylaws. They've got nothing to do with nationality. They've got nothing to do with refugee or asylum seeker status or migration. They are just bylaws. Please implement them and leave Home Affairs alone. I want to emphasize that, and I'm happy, because if you go into the judgment, the judge has actually confirmed that. It has always been our position. To an extent where he did something unusual, he awarded costs to us against the city council that they must pay our costs, because they were not supposed to have dragged us into this. So I just want you to know that. So the ruling is what we expected, but what we've been asking city council to do, we are still making a calling even to the committee that there are laws in this country and they fall in different departments. When there is a law falling in a different department, whether the person who is breaching that law is a South African or not, that law must be implemented. If somebody opens a business in a wrong area, the people who give business licenses must move. They mustn't say no because this person is from such and such a country. Home Affairs is the one that must move. It shouldn't. So that has been confirmed. The second thing that has been confirmed by this ruling, Chairperson, we've been making this statement and we're called xenophobic, that the vulnerability of being a migrant does not give you a license to disrespect the laws of the host country. It can't. Laws are laws and they must be implemented by all and sundry. And the judge has also actually confirmed that people cannot go and open their own fiefdom. The third thing that has been confirmed, Chairperson, which we have been saying many times, is that this story of going to resettle in another country, the third country resettlement, which the people who were doing a city in the refugees were demanding, it's not going to happen, and we've repeated that many times, for the simple reason that third country of resettlement have got their own rules, and the basic rule is that they don't take people as a group, no matter how grave the situation is. You apply as individuals and say, I'm applying to get into Namibia, I'm applying to get into Canada as an individual, and they choose. And we have repeated that when they did not believe, we then sent ministers of religion, if you remember, the archbishops and the bishops who were assaulted, we sent them, please, maybe because you are men and women of cloth, they believe in you. Tell them this is not how United Nations work. Namibia even put it in writing. I've got two letters from the Minister of Home Affairs in Namibia, making very clear that they won't accept people in a group because they are protesting. In January, I was in a conference on OECD. I met the Deputy Minister of Refugee Affairs and Immigration in Canada, who also made it very clear that these are the rules and nobody is going to breach them. If anybody in your country believes that they can just get into Canada without following the rules, it's not going to happen. And we kept on bringing this information to them. So the court has also confirmed that issue of just sitting and say, I want to go to this country, is not going to happen. The third and most important issue, Chairperson, we have been calling on the country not to misuse or allow people to misuse the issue of being a refugee. We have been insisting that the leaders of these refugee groups are not actually refugees. They are militia from the Congo. They are militia people, renegade soldiers who were there, who are using these people, and especially women and children, the weaponized women and children, who called them to the church and say, we are going to go to Canada, when they knew it was not true. I've been making this statement, and they were saying we are colors, we're not receptive to refugees, we're xenophobic and all that. I was making this point all the time, that the poor women and children are being weaponized and used by people for their own ends when they know very well who they are. And you remember that in December, the two leaders, were actually arrested. One for assault, 8 counts of assault, 5 of which is assault with GPH, which is very serious, grievous bodily harm. The other was arrested for theft. And now they are still leading refugees even after being identified as people who can do something like that. But the judge, if you read the judgment, he made it very clear that these groups are misleading people. They are not leaders. They are making use of refugee status to mislead vulnerable people who then believe because of their vulnerability. Now, all these things have been confirmed, but the bottom line, Chairperson, even in future, the issue of bylaws, if they are breached by any person, whether it's coming from South Africa or not, the cities must deal with them. And after this judgment, I'll still resend it to SALGA, as I wrote them a letter to ask for this. I'll tell them, here is a judge who confirmed what we've been asking you to do all the time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Minister. Can we take the next presentation? And I want to welcome Honorable Lizel and Honorable Tato. I think we're welcoming you in a new year. Can you take the next presentation? It's by Advocate Erasmus. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members. Thank you very much for the opportunity. What I'm going to do, Chairperson, is just to take the Honorable Members through the proposed amendments that were made by the National Council of Provinces, the Select Committee. So the background to the matter is that on the 26th of November 2019, the Select Committee on Security and Justice decided and deliberated on the proposed amendments that were made after having engaged the Department, National Treasury, SAPS, SANDF, as well as the different departments engaging with one another on the bill following the suggested amendment that was agreed to between the Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance. So today's expectation, obviously what we want to do is just to indicate how these amendments feed into the B bill and what the D bill will look like once the amendments have been included in there. So there is a draft D bill as well. So I'm going to take the committee and honorable members through each and every one of those amendments. It's technical in nature, but it's subsequent. There are also consequential amendments that flow based on the decision that was taken to remove the South African National Revenue Service from the bill. So, Chair, if I may go, the first amendment that was in terms of the committee that was adopted was on page 5 of the bill. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the B bill, the one that was submitted to the National Council of Provinces, i.e. the Select Committee, and then also say how that impacts on the D bill, where the amendment is done. Is that fine, Chairperson, if I follow that procedure?
How many bills do we have? Is it C or... I see here I have a B, a C, and a D.
Okay, Chairperson, the B bill is the bill that was forwarded to the National Council of Provinces once it was finalized by the portfolio committee. So that's the first bill I'm going to be working on, because that was the bill. Then the D bill is the one that would capture the amendments that's in the C list. So in other words, so the B bill goes to the select committee, the amendments are made. That's when you have the C list, that's that C bill that you have. That C bill then feeds into the D bill, which would then have to be approved by the committee. So I just thought that I'd work on all three of those documents just to indicate this was the suggested amendment, this is where it will occur in the B bill, and this is what it looks like now in the D bill after the amendment has been made.
Yes, we can proceed because I want members to understand properly. So take them in that sequence so that we can enter into a fruitful and orderly discussions.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will endeavor to do so. So, Chairperson, the first amendment that was proposed by the Select Committee was on... So let's look at page 5 of the B Bill. So in other words, it's Bill B9B of 2016. If you go to page 5 of that bill, you will see on that bill, on the right-hand side there, on numbers 5, 10, 15, 20, those are the line numbers. So if I read from the report of the Select Committee, it says that on page 5, after line 6, to insert the following definition. So what we've done here is to insert the definition of customs-related functions, means functions performed exclusively by the South African Revenue Service under A, customs and excise legislation, and B, any tax act, as defined in the Tax Administration Act 2011, Act number 28 of 2011. The reason for including this is because we had to make it clear once you come to the clause 2, which deals with those specific departments that will not form part of the BMA, they then refer to customer-related functions. So what you do is you insert that definition of customs-related functions. So see on page 5, they're in line 6. So after the definition of constitution and before the definition of defense force, there would be a definition of customs-related functions means, as I've just indicated now. So, Chair, if I may take that liberty, if you go to the D bill, in other words, it says Bill 9D of 2016, on page 5, what you will see there is that immediately after the definition of constitution, there is a definition of customs-related functions that have now been inserted in the bill.
Just hold on. Can I ascertain whether members are having all the documents? Minister, are you okay? Okay. Okay. I think we're all clarified. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So that deals with the first suggested amendment. The second one that was suggested by the Select Committee was on page 5 of the B Bill from line 32. Was to omit the definition of revenue. So if you go to the B bill on page 5 and you look at line 32, you'll see that there's a definition. It says revenue has the meaning ascribed to it in section 1 of the South African Revenue Services Act 1997, Act number 34 of 1997. It was decided that definition should be deleted in view of the fact that SARS has been taken out of the BMA bill, because that's the only way where we're going to use it. So if you go to the D bill on page 5, you will note that after the definition of regulation, there's in line 36 of that bill, you'll see that the definition of revenue no longer appears in the bill. The next definition brings us to the next amendment that was suggested, the South African Revenue Service definition. So if you look at number 3 of the suggested amendments or proposed amendments by the Select Committee, it says that on page 5, after line 33, to insert the following definition, which is a definition of South African Revenue Service, meaning the South African Revenue Service established by Section 2 of the South African Revenue Service Act 1997, Act number 34 of 1997. So if we go to the B bill and you look on page 5 in line 33, so in other words, immediately where the definition of revenue was removed, we are now including the definition of South African Revenue Service means as I've indicated now. So if we turn to the D bill, you will see that on page 5, there would be in line 37, you'll see the new definition that's been inserted. South African Revenue Service means the South African Revenue Service established by Section 2 of the South African Revenue Service Act, 1997, Act Number 34 of 1997. Chairperson, that is as far as Clause 1 is concerned, the amendments that were suggested. May I move to Clause 2? Right. The proposed amendments by the Select Committee in terms of Clause 2 of the bill is as follows. It says, on page 5, in line 44, to omit this, in other words, the word this, and to substitute it with the words except where the Act otherwise provides for, comma, this. So what this would mean is, if you look on page 5 in line 44 of the bill, you will see that it currently reads there in the B bill now. 3, this Act does not apply to. So in other words, this is the clause that I spoke about just now to say which departments will be exempt from this specific bill. So we are basically deleting the word this and we're inserting the words except where the Act otherwise provides for this, and then it will read Act does not apply to. And the reason why we included this is because it's a consequential amendment because of the or it's an amendment because of the fact that we are, the customs-related functions are being written out of the legislation. So if you go to the D bill, also on page 5, you will see that the sub-clause 3 in clause 2 of the bill now reads, except where the Act otherwise provides, comma, this. So that's the insertion that has happened there. If we look at the next, the proposed amendment in clause 2 of the bill, this is on page 5, in line 45 of the bill, to omit exercise and to substitute performed. So if you look in the B bill, in line 45, you'll see that in that paragraph 8 says the border protection functions exercised by the Defence Force. That word exercise has now been replaced by the word performed, and the reason for that is that throughout the in other areas of the bill, we refer to the word performed, not exercised, because you perform a function, you don't exercise it. So Chair, if you go to the D bill, you will see that paragraph A now says the border protection functions performed by the Defence Force. So exercise has been deleted there. The next amendment, Chair, is on page 5 in line 46 of the B bill. We're omitting the word and there. And the reason for that is you previously in the B bill you only had a paragraph A and B. But you'll see as we go further we're going to add a paragraph C now. So in other words, from a drafting style and perspective, the and has to come out there and it has to be added at the end of paragraph B. So it's a technical amendment, consequential, that needs to be effected. So you just deleting the word and after paragraph B, there's the end in line 46. So what you'll see in on page 5, in line 51-52 of the D bill, you would see there's no and appearing after the word republic. So that's been deleted. So the next amendment that we're dealing with that was proposed is on page 5, in line 48. What we're doing there is at the end of paragraph B, to remove the full stop. And this is drafting style and format. So you're taking away the full stop, you're going to put in there a semicolon and the word and. It's just so that it flows because you're going to go to a paragraph C now. So if you look at the D bill on page 5, you'll see in line 51, 2, 3, 54, you'll see there that after paragraph B, there is a semicolon and the word and that has been inserted as per the proposed amendment. Then, Chairperson, the next amendment that was proposed was on page 5, after line 48, to insert the following paragraph. So we insert the paragraph C there, which states the customs-related functions performed by the South African Revenue Service. So if you read all of this together, it would mean that except where the Act otherwise provides, this Act does not apply to, and then you'll have C, the customs-related functions performed by the South African Revenue Service, and obviously this is based on the agreement that was reached between our minister and the minister of finance at that point in time. So if you go to the D bill, page 5, in line 55 there, you will see there's a paragraph C that has been added, and it reads the customs related functions performed by the South African Revenue Service. Chairperson, if I may turn to the next amendment, if you look at the next amendments are in clause 5 of the bill. Now, clause 5 of the bill deals with the functions of the authority, and what you had there as paragraph C was to facilitate the collection of revenue within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry. So obviously, because of the fact that revenue collection is being deleted from the bill, that specific is a consequential amendment that also has to be deleted from the bill. And how we go about doing that is you'll see that we say on page 6, in line 15, after the semicolon, so in other words, after the word entry, you'll do to add the word and. And this is just a technical amendment because that and now needs to be there. You're taking away the paragraph C, and the D there would become paragraph C. So you need an and there to link the subparagraphs. So what the second one we're doing on page 6, from line 16, to omit paragraph C and to omit the word and. So what we're doing is we're taking out the whole of paragraph C that was there that said facilitate the collection of revenue within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry and. So we're taking all of that out. And then if you look in the D bill on page 6, you will see that the previous paragraph C that was there, look at line 20, the wording is no longer there, doesn't appear, to facilitate the collection of revenue, it's been deleted. Then, Chair, technical amendment, what we're doing is with the next amendment is just to say that the previous paragraph D now reads paragraph C. The wording remains the same, it's just a technical amendment, so D now becomes C. So if you look on page 21 in the D bill, you'll see that the words cooperate and coordinate its border law and functions now has become paragraph C. It's no longer D as it was in the B bill. Chair, we can then turn to page 12 on the B bill, which is where the next amendment, suggested amendment appears. So, Chair, that amendment says on page 12, in line 18, after the word act to omit, comma, excluding revenue collected in terms of section 5C. So if you look on page 12 of the B bill, line 18, you'll see, well, that paragraph C says any monies legally acquired by it, comma, subject to treasury regulations and instructions made in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, and then it must stop there. The words excluding revenue collected in terms of section 5C is being deleted from the text because of the deletion of the whole issue of revenue and such from the bill. So it's a consequential amendment that we had to effect. So if you go to the D bill on page 12, if you look at line 15, 16, 17, you will see that paragraph says any other money is illegally acquired by it, comma, subject to treasury regulations and instructions made in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, full stop. The words excluding revenue collected in terms of section 5C has been deleted from the text. Chair, we can then go to page 14 where the next amendment appears. Now, that amendment relates to the implementation protocols, clause 27 of the bill. So a lot of the wording that was previously in the B bill has still been retained, but because of the new amendments and the suggestions by the select committee, it had to be reworded. So where you previously had what we can see there, four sub-clauses, you now have six sub-clauses in terms of the proposed amendments. And this is also where the select committee had indicated that there should not only be an implementation protocol with the South African Revenue Services, there must also be an implementation protocol with both National Defence Force and the South African Police Service as well. So what has happened there is the following. We're saying there, on page 14 of the bill, from line 3, so in other words, from the wording implementation protocols, the heading, we're saying to omit clause 27 because we're substituting it. So you're taking out the whole clause 27 and you're substituting it with the following clause. It would read implementation protocols, and then Clause 27.1 would read, for the purposes of this section, comma, implementation protocol means an implementation protocol concluded in accordance with Section 35 of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, comma, 2005, Act Number 13 of 2005. So what you're doing in this specific section is you're defining what an implementation protocol means, and you can do it in a section. Subsection 2 there, or subclause 2, would then read, where the implementation of a policy, the exercise of a statutory power, the performance of a statutory function, or the provision of a service relating to border law enforcement functions by the authority depends on the particular participation of other organs of state, the authority and those organs of state must, within a reasonable time after the commencement of the Act, coordinate their respective functions in such a manner as may be appropriate or required in the circumstances by entering into an implementation protocol. Then you would see that is basically more or less the wording that we used in the Beeble Clause 27.1 that was there. Then subclause 3 states the following, the organs of state referred to in subsection 2 must. So in other words, these are other organs of state excluding SARS, Defense, and the South African Police Services, because we're dealing with them in Clause 5. So we're saying the organs of state referred to in subsection 2 must, within a reasonable time after the commencement of the Act, enter into an implementation protocol with the authority to collaborate on and ensure the alignment of technological, electronic, information, and communication systems and procedures necessary to ensure the efficient sharing of relevant information with the authority. Subclause 4 now reads that the minister may initiate the process for the conclusion of implementation protocols contemplated in subsections 2 and 3 in the Interministerial Consultative Committee. Then there's the new Clause 5, Paragraph A. The authority must, comma, within 6 months after the commencement of this section, conclude implementation protocols with, 1, the Defence Force, 2, the South African Police Service, and 3, the South African Revenue Service, for the mandatory coordination of their respective functions within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry. And there was also paragraph B that was inserted to indicate that if any of the implementation protocols contemplated in paragraph A, meaning the implementation protocol specifically referring to Defence Force, South African Police Service, and the South African Revenue Service, if they have not been concluded, the minister, in other words, the Minister of Home Affairs, and the cabinet member responsible for defense and military veterans, police, or finance, in other words, one of the three ministers there, as the case may be, so whichever would be applicable, must determine the relevant implementation protocol. So if it's not done within 6 months, the ministers must finalize that. The subclause 6 that we're inserting there is to say that the implementation of the implementation protocols concluded in terms of this section must be coordinated by the Interministerial Consultative Committee, which is a committee obviously that's been established in terms of the bill as it is currently before the House. So Chair, with all of this that has been said, if you look on page 14 of the D bill, you would see there that clause 27, everything that I've read now has been included there, so you've got a sub clause 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, A and B and 6. Then, Chair, the next amendment that we look at is to clause 28 of the bill. So the proposed amendment there was to say on page 14 of the B bill, in line 28. So in other words, you can see it starts with 26, 27, brackets 2, 30, 31B. That's where we are. To say that we must omit, in other words, delete reference to 27.2, and we must substitute it with 27 brackets 4 and 27.5b. That's a consequential amendment based on the amendments that have been made in terms of clause 27 of the bill. The previous one in the B bill, the 27.2 that was there, is indicated that the minister may initiate the process for the conclusion of implementation protocols in the Interministerial Consultative Committee. Remember, this clause 28 deals with delegations by the minister, so we're saying in those instances, minister cannot delegate that function. But because of the amendment that has now been effected in terms of clause 27, the correct references now is clause 27.4. So if you look on page 14 of the D bill, there it says clause 4 says the minister may initiate the process for the conclusion of implementation protocols contemplated in subsections 2 and 3 in the Interministerial Consultative Committee. so he cannot delegate that power. Then if you look at clause 27.5b, it indicates that if any of the implementation protocols contemplated in paragraph A are not concluded, the minister and the cabinet member responsible for defense and military veterans, police or finance as the case, must determine the relevant implementation protocol. That is also a function that cannot be delegated by the minister. He or she has to do it him or herself. Chair, what we can do then is go to page 17 on the B bill as well as the D bill. That's where the next amendments appear. It's consequential amendments. There we look at clause 39 of the bill, Chairperson. So on page 17, in line 26, after the word ports, we indicated that we must insert the words points and places. The reason for that is if you look at the heading that appears in line 25 on page 8, it says ports, comma, points and places of entry or exit. So what you're doing in clause 39.1 is just to say that the ports, comma, points and places that you're inserting, if you go to the D bill on page 17, you will see in line 36, it says that the ports, comma, points and places, the words have been inserted there. And then the second amendment that goes with that is also after the word entry to insert the words or exit. So it would read the same as the heading. So you'll see in the D bill on page 17 in line 36, after the word entry, the words or exit appear. So the amendment has been effected. Chair, the next amendment and the last one that was done, which are consequential amendments as well, on page 17, we look at from line 39 in the B bill, is to omit subsection 1B or C after consultation with the Commissioner of South African Revenue Service or the Minister of Agriculture, comma, as the case may be. So if you look on page 17 in line 39, you'll see that it says at the end of that line, it says entry exit under. So we're deleting the words 1B or C. That whole sentence, in other words, after the word under, there will be a dash. The words subsection 1B or C after consultation with the Commission of that has been deleted from the text. And we're going to replace it with the following. Because, and this is a consequential amendment, remember revenue and all of this customer-related functions that has now been defined. What you have is paragraph A, because there are still points and places of entry that is declared by SARS. So what would happen there is that it would read subsection 1B must be done in consultation with the Commissioner for South African Revenue. So in other words, there has to be agreement in this regard. And as far as the consultation with regard to the Minister of Agriculture is concerned, if you look at paragraph C above, that has to be done after consultation with the Minister of Agriculture, as the case may be. So those are just consequential amendments. So if you look on page 17 of the bill, we go to line 49. You will see after the word under, there's a dash that's inserted, and then you've got paragraph A and B, where these words that I've just read out now appear. A is subsection 1B, comma, in consultation with the Minister of the Commissioner of the South African Revenue Service, or B, subsection 1C, comma, after consultation with Minister of Agriculture, and all of that is as the case may be, in other words, in whichever is applicable. So those were the suggested amendments by the Select Committee Chairperson, and these are how they will fit into the B bill and relating to the D bill going forward, Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you very much, Deputy Minister. The word general in your hands. The Minister just requested that he takes a quick interview outside. But now that the tea came late, I think we can break for 5 minutes just to attend to the issues of the tea and then and come back. Thank you. All right.
That's correct.
How are you?
Very happy.
Good. When is the limit for today's meeting?
Today's Tuesday. Maybe by Friday, late Friday or Monday, definitely by Monday.
Well, I was going to ask something else. Oh, what did they start with?
The border management. There was a little sort of overview of the immigration issue here at the church.
Oh.
So the minister spoke a little bit about that.
Okay, cool. Because I got in
the info that
for the DMA.
Yeah, that's, and then after that the DMA.
Okay, I
there's many places.
Thank you very much. The 5 minutes is over, colleagues and members. Just before I hand over to the Deputy Minister and the Minister, can we allow the State Law Advisor to, in 5 minutes, to talk to the consequential amendments as it relates to the object of the bill. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, members, colleagues. Yes, I just wanted us to have a look quickly at the memo on the object of the bill. As you know, the memo on the object provides a summary for whatever happens in the bill. It gives you an overview of that. So because there were some amendments proposed to the B bill, the memo on the objects also had to be amended in order for the summary to be accurate. So if I can just quickly take us through those. If we look at the memo on the objects of the B bill on page 18, it relates to the objects of the bill. I'm going through only those amendments, that is the amendments, well, the paragraphs contained in paragraph 3, which deals with the object of the bill. So our first amendment proposed was in respect of paragraph 3.1. We basically had to indicate that we are inserting some other definitions which are important for the understanding of the bill, and that is why we amended the paragraph to include a new sentence. So if you look in the D bill, the memo on the objects of the D bill, which is now on page 19 of the D bill, paragraph 3.1 reads exactly the same, but then we've just added there, this clause also contains a definition for the term customs-related functions. i.e. the functions performed exclusively by the South African Revenue Service under customs and excise legislation and any tax act. So that was just to indicate that there's a new amendment which is quite important for us also in order to understand the amendments that we've affected in Clause 2. Then if we go to, speaking of Clause 2, in the B Bill, Clause 2 started on page 18, paragraph 3.2. We basically had to amend that also because if you remember correctly, we excluded SARS's functions from the application of the bill, and therefore we had to add a paragraph to explain that, and that we did in the D Bill on page 20. Also paragraph 3.2, so the paragraph remains the same, but then we just added in the end, except where the envisaged act otherwise provides, the envisaged act does not apply to the border protection functions, including those performed in respect of the airspace of the Republic by the Defence Force, the Postal Services as defined in Section 1 of the Postal Services Act, and the customs-related functions performed by the South African Revenue Service. So basically just a repetition of what we said in Clause 2 to make it clear that we are now excluding also SARS from the application of the envisaged act. And then with regard to Clause 5, which also had an amendment, in the memo on the object of the B Bill, Clause 5 was on page 19 of the memo on the object, and basically we just had to indicate there that we excluded the function that we gave to the Border Management Authority in relation to the facilitation of the collection of revenue. You will see in the B Bill, it is still there. In addition, the authority will facilitate the collection of revenue. But then in the D Bill, we had to delete that last part of the sentence. So now on your D Bill on page 20, if you look at paragraph 3.5, which deals with clause 5, there won't be any reference anymore to the facilitation of revenue collection by SARS because they were deleted from the application of the envisaged act. Then our next amendment was pertaining to Clause 22, and that was, if you look in the B Bill, that was previously on page 21 of the B Bill. Once again, because we removed the revenue collection facilitation function by the BMA, we deleted it from the application of the Act. We also deleted it from the funds, the reference to it in Clause 22, which deals with the funds of the authority. And if you look at the B Bill, at the end of paragraph 3.22, it still states that it excludes the revenue collected in terms of Section 5C. So because we deleted that part of the clause in Clause 22 of the Bill, we also had to delete it in the memo on the object. So if you look at the new D Bill, you won't find the last part there anymore that refers to revenue collection. So we deleted it. If you look at page 22, paragraph 3.22, there's no reference anymore to revenue collection. Then clause 27, which was on page 21 of the memo on the object of the B Bill, basically, we substituted that complete clause, so we had to refer to some of the amendments now in the D Bill also to just give a summary of what we did. So in the D Bill, clause 27 is dealt with in paragraph 3.27. And that is on page 22. And there we just give a short summary of what Clause 27 now entails, the new Clause 27. So we added the last part of that paragraph, which starts with the proposed. So it now reads, the proposed Clause 27.5 provides for the conclusion of implementation protocols by the authority with the Defence Force, the South African Police Service, and the South African Revenue Service within 6 months after the commencement of this clause, once enacted, for the mandatory coordination of the respective functions within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry. So that is just reflecting the latest amendments to Clause 27. And then I believe we didn't make any further amendments because even though there were amendments to Clause 28 and to Clause 39, it wasn't necessary for us to amend those because it was the summary was worded in very general terms, so not necessary for us to reflect those changes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. And I should say this, that last week we deliberated on the, not last week, a week before, we deliberated on these amendments, and we have generally reached an agreement that the amendments are proper. And really, from my side as the chair, I would like to thank the work put by the NCOP in terms of enhancing the work which was done by both the Executive and the National Assembly. There you are, members. There is a report before us. We need to adopt this this amendment. We report back to the House. It says the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, having considered the Border Management Authority Bill and the proposed amendments by the National Council of Provinces referred to by this committee, accept and amend the bill as proposed. Can I take hands for adoption? And before hands for adoption, I would like to welcome Honorable Pambo. We have not seen him in the committee this year, so we appreciate and compliments of the new season. Honorable members, can we move for adoption? Honorable Ngwasa.
I would like to move for the adoption of the BMA with the amendments made.
Any second?
Thank you,
Chairperson.
I move to second
Honorable. There is a seconder. Any objection?
Thank you, Chair. There's no objection to these changes in terms of the NCOP and the changes that have been made.
Just wait a bit. Can we put our phones on silence, colleagues, because they are really disturbing the meeting. I understand it's a better life that the ANC has fought for, but if they can be on silence, proceed.
Thanks, Chair, but we would still reserve our right to consult with our caucus. In terms of, I think there's a few other changes that have been recommended down the line, and some of them are very technical changes. I don't understand why they haven't been included, but we'll take those up in the appropriate forum, Chair. So the changes as they've been presented from the NCOP, there's no real problem with them. But as I said, we'll make further proposals in the relevant forum.
Okay, so it's not necessarily an objection, it's just a reservation of your position.
Chair, so what we're saying is these changes, yeah, we accept these changes. But the overall bill, there's still one or two reservations. But we will bring it up in the appropriate forum. So we accept these changes.
So there's
not the bill as it is.
So there's no objection.
So we reserve our right on the bill. There's no objection to
this. If there's no objection,
to these
save changes. For you reserving a right to raise issues in an appropriate forum.
There's no objection to the changes.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
So I'm just saying that we still have one or two reservations about the rest of the bill.
Can we do it by a show of hands now, so that Yes, Honorable Musa.
But Chair, I don't think that we must go to that route, because there's an appreciation on the work that has been done, and unanimously we accept the amendment. Thanks.
I take it that we are unanimously accepting this report that we are taking to the National Assembly.
We are abstaining as the EFF. Okay, thank you.
Okay, the report is adopted. It is going for the debate. Thank you very much. Can you step off this item? It will be presented by the Acting Director General. Is a second and third quarter report from the Department of Home Affairs. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I said, the Acting Director General, Mr. McKay, is attending to NETLAC activities. So this presentation will be made by the DDG responsible for strategic planning, Mr. Mabuso. I'll give over to him to go through the presentation, Chair. If the Chair allows, I'm giving over to Mr. Mabuso to go on with the issues.
Thank you, Minister. Mr. Mabuso.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. As directed by the Minister and requested by the Committee, we are going to present our quarter two and quarter three performance report in line with the...
Sorry, Mr. Mabuso. Honourable Mkota. Yes, thanks. We have put your chair, that's right. Welcome, Honourable Mkota. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. So, as I was saying, that the presentation is in line with the APP that was approved by Parliament. So, I will take members through. This is just the outline of the presentation, where we'll just indicate our vision, mission, and value statement, the contribution that the department is making to the priorities and outcomes of government broadly, and specifically the DHA outcomes and strategic objectives, which obviously are propelling us in terms of achieving our mandate. And also I'll deal then specifically with those targets, the financial information, and some of the challenges that we are faced with, and how do we deal with the priorities moving forward. Chair, as the department, we are tasked with the responsibility of ensuring a safe, secure South Africa where all its people are proud of and value their identity and citizenship. That is the vision of the department, and our mission, obviously, is to ensure that we efficiently determine and safeguard the identity and status of citizens, and ensure that the management of immigration to ensure security, promote development, and fulfillment of national obligations is carried out. Below is just the value statements of the department in terms of the commitment that we are making. The next slide, as I said, deals with the broad contribution that we are making to the priorities of government. There's four specific outcomes of government where the Department of Home Affairs is making direct contributions. The first one is outcome three, ensuring that all people in South Africa are and feel safe, decent employment through inclusive economic growth. Outcome 12, an efficient, effective development-oriented public service. And outcome 14, nation building and social cohesion. I think as we present, also we'll be able to draw a link of the work that we do to these four outcomes. We then determined what we regard as our outcomes of the Department of Home Affairs and specific strategic objectives, which will ensure that we are able to deliver our mandate. The first outcome, obviously, secured South African citizenship and identity, with specific strategic objectives of ensuring that all eligible citizens are issued with enabling documents relating to identity and status. These obvious is your ID documents, your marital, your birth, to ensure that the person is either married or is alive. And then the third strategic objective is an integrated and digitized national identity system that is secure and contains biometrics of every person recorded in the system. And so the third one is ensure that systems are in place to enable the capturing of biometric data of all travelers who enter and exit the Republic of South Africa legally. The second outcome is outcome two, secured and responsive immigration system. I think, Chairperson, you're fully aware that we are revamping this particular area. One of the strategic objectives there is to ensure that refugees and asylum seekers are managed and documented efficiently, movement of persons in and out of the country is managed according to a risk-based approach, and that enabling documents issued to foreigners efficiently and securely. And the third outcome is to ensure that services to citizens and clients that are accessible and efficient. And then there are four outcomes, four strategic objectives under that particular outcome three, which relate in the main on the delivery of services to citizens and ensuring good governance, ethical conduct and zero tolerance to crime, fraud and corruption, and collaboration with stakeholders in support of service delivery and core objectives of the department. So in a nutshell, that's what propelled us to be able to achieve our mandate. Now, Chair and members, if you look at the report that we're going to be presenting in the second quarter of the 2019-2020 financial year, we did not achieve 41% of our target that we set in the second quarter. So our performance was sitting at 59%. In the third quarter, we ramped up and put interventions, and some of the targets that were at risk, we were able to achieve 31% of those particular targets. We did not achieve the 31%, we achieved 69%, so we improved the performance by 10% in the third quarter of the current financial year. Thanks, Minister, for that. So overall, just in terms of numbers, there were 27 targets in quarter 2, 16 were achieved and 11 were not. In quarter 3, there were 26, 18 were achieved, 8 were not achieved. So that's how we fared. And I think this particular slide, which just demonstrates in terms of graphs, where the performance were, because remember we've got three programs in the department. There are program 1, which is all the branches that look at administrative matters and support functions, and then branch 2, which is civic services, and program 3, which is immigration. So in quarter 2, the program 1 was at 56%, and program 2 and 3, they were 67%. And in quarter 3, there was an improvement in program 1 with 65%, and then civic services remained at 67%, and then immigration services improved from 67% to 83% in quarter 3. Chair, when we looked at our performance, when we were performing or conducting our quarterly review assessment, we do envisage that by the end of the financial year, we expect that the overall target achievement will exceed 80%. Now, these are the targets that were not achieved in quarter 2, which I would like to quickly go through them, the 11 that I mentioned. There was an evaluation for accredited bidders which was supposed to be finalized. I'll talk to them in the specific targets when I get to each program. The integration testing on the e-gates, which was supposed to have done for the Cape Town Airport. The second draft of the DHA bill, which was supposed to be submitted to our EXCO and the Minister's Management Meeting. The third draft of the bill, which was supposed to be consulted with stakeholders within government. And the first draft of the policy, again, which was supposed to be sent consulted internally. And then also, I'll be specific, these are marriage policy and also identity policy. And then the third, the fourth target that was not achieved there is draft feasibility study submitted to project manager for, that is the BMA. Again, I'll talk to that in specific. And then also those are the assessments in terms of security clearance, the 750,000 smart card issued to citizens, the reports in relation to consultation with the FOSAT cluster, and the National Targeting Center study finalized. And then in the third quarter, there were 8 of those targets. So I'll also specifically talk to them when I get to the specific program. I think it will be better because in the specific program, we have explained in detail what are those targets all about and why they were not achieved. So if you allow me to go to under Program 1 under administration, the first target which we said was not achieved in relation to the evaluation for accredited bidders was supposed to have been completed. Chairperson, we came to the house, to the committee previously and indicated that there was a target that we had around the development of the national identity system, which our intention was to say before we could even start the bidding process for this, we were supposed to issue a request for accreditation for competent, for competent bidders to be able to submit their bids for the development of the national identity system. We indicated in the committee that previously what the work that we had done was that we had wanted a system that was used by the Cubans where they were going to develop a system that was similar to theirs and hand over to us to be able to operate, because we are going to do that through a country-to-country agreement rather than going to buy proprietary software from private companies. But obviously that approach was not successful when we approached National Treasury. This happened about four or five years ago. So we then opted to go this particular route. But again, Chair, we raised some of the concern in relation to this route. That is why we then, in the third quarter, we then came to Parliament to say that we request that the target be discontinued so that we can go back and consult after the change of the administration and new Parliament last year. We had raised this issue with the Minister, indicating some of the challenges that we've had in the past in relation to the development of the national identity system. So there was an agreement that we removed this particular target from the APP. That's why in the third quarter you can see that the target was discontinued. We wrote to Parliament. Parliament approved that we discontinue the target, and we tabled an erratum in terms of the APP for 2019-2020. So that's where we are with this particular target. So it will be reintroduced in the APP because we still want the national identity system, which will cater for both biometric and biographic details of citizens, non-citizens, in order to ensure that we have a single view of the client. Because currently, some of the information that we deal with sits on different databases. Sometimes it creates problems for verifications. We end up saying to a person, no, you are not on this database, and find the person is on a different database. Now, this in terms of asylum seekers, in terms of refugees, in terms of normal travelers who come into the country, and citizens. So that is why what the NIS will bring to us. The next target that was not achieved, which I'll go to slide 14, if members were to, was the issue relating to an e-gate. So what happened here is that we had a target that we had agreed with some of our external partners, in with specific reference to AXA. We want to be able to introduce e-gates at our ports of entry so that travelers who travel internationally are able to process themselves, as it is a trend globally where if you have trusted travelers, they can be able to process themselves. But what you need for an e-gate to operate effectively, you need a back-end engine where it's going to be able to have live transaction. When someone goes through the port to put their fingerprints, to be able to verify with their data, the back-end system, and open the gate for a person to be able to process themselves. One of the dependencies that we have on the e-gates is the automated biometric system, which is currently under development, which is way past the period it was supposed to have been completed with. It's a critical element in relation to us achieving that particular target. That's one of the reasons why we're not able to achieve that, because it must integrate with the biometric system. So we are obviously putting some corrective measures in order for us to be able to achieve that target. One of the things that we thought we should do, instead of pointing it to the ABIS system, which is not ready, is to point it to the current HANIS system, which obviously we are trying to avoid, because HANIS system only can verify fingerprints but does not use facial recognition, because the gates also have the capability of using facial recognition, which ABIS was going to be able to deliver for us. So that is the reason also that we did not achieve this particular target, and also obviously there were some of the resources that we needed to be able to help us with the integration. You will recall, Chairperson, that we have an agreement between ourselves and the Revenue Services of utilizing some of their IT resources in relation to the development of this system. So there was supposed to have been a contract extension between the two ministers, which has subsequently happened. So at least in the fourth quarter, we have that contracting agreement. So we are pushing to ensure that those resources are able to help us to be able to achieve this annual target of ensuring that the e-gates are operational. The other target that was met in the second quarter was in relation to the rollout of the e-permit or e-visa system, so we use that word interchangeably. In the second quarter, we did achieve the target which related to the procurement of IT equipment which were needed for the e-visa. So the third quarter, we needed to roll out the e-visa in three missions because our annual target there was to roll it out in six missions. I must say, Chairperson, in hindsight, one realizes that we actually should not have even referred to missions in relation to the e-visa when we were crafting this particular target. We should have actually referred to countries because the e-visa is a web-based system. So if you roll it out and enabling citizens of a particular country, let's say India for an example, when we did the testing in India, the citizens, irrespective of whether they are located in India, they will just apply. So they are not attached to a mission. So a target should have made reference to a country. But we are dealing with it with the AG in relation to the audit for the achievement of this particular target. So we did roll it out in the third quarter in Kenya. Obviously, post that particular pilot, there were issues that we needed to resolve, which we did that over a period of December. And then we, on the 16th of January this year, we also processed some of the passengers or visitors traveling or tourists traveling out of India in order for us to test in the Indian part. We are now going to be dealing with the Nigerian and China clients in the month of March. We envisage the second to the Friday, the 6th of March, with the Kenyans, with the Nigerians. What we were waiting for was the payment gateway system, which was with China and India. It was easy for us to do the pilot because those two countries are exempted from visa fees. But countries like Nigeria and China, they are not. So we are on Tuesday next week, we'll be releasing the payment system onto our e-visa, and we've been testing it, so I think we're quite happy with it now. So on Tuesday, there is a release on the system, and then we can be able then to go to process the Nigerian clients and then China in the fourth quarter. That obviously will lead us to the achievement of that particular target as envisaged in the APP. Slide 16, I'll go straight to slide 17, which again deals with the targets that have not been achieved. In this instance, what we had wanted was to submit the final draft of the DHA bill to Cabinet for approval. This was now the fourth quarter target, but in the second quarter, we're supposed to draft that DHA bill and submit it to the minister and EXCO and also consult within government. So that was not achieved because at the time the BA bill was still being edited. Again, in terms of the legal capacity, legal services, we had some challenges because they were a bit stretched, so we had to appoint a service provider, which we subsequently appointed in the third quarter. So we are on track to achieve that particular target as an annual target because the issue of the draft bill is going according to what we call the schedule now. So we expect that by the 31st of March, that bill will be submitted. Then, Chairperson, the next one was the official identity management policy, which also needed to be submitted to Cabinet for approval for public consultation. We did not achieve that particular target in slide 18 now, in the second quarter, but in the third quarter we did manage to achieve the target because in the third quarter what we were supposed to do was to submit the third draft to the Minister for approval and also to submit the socio-economic impact assessment report which needed to be submitted to the Department of Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation. That report was submitted, so we were able to achieve that particular target in the third quarter. The next target that also we did not achieve in the third quarter, which in second quarter we did, was what we call a revised DHA access model, which needed to be approved by a minister. Chair, in this instance, we had appointed a service provider. I think we did indicate that we had appointed CSIR at the beginning of the first quarter, and then there was obvious work that needed to be done in relation to the research work. This is obviously a model that we have done many years ago. We had to review it in relation to our footprint development so that we know that where we actually locate offices is in line with a scientific model that says for you to be able to have a functional office that has got the clientele that that allows people to have access, not within a particular radius. For some offices, obviously, we need to ensure that the service to citizens is not within unreasonable radius. So you look at the population dynamics, you look at the vastness of the area, and that's what the study is doing to us. So we are on track to achieve that particular target at the end of the financial year, even though the third quarter was not achieved. So that's one of the challenges. Obviously, we do indicate some of the corrective actions that we're taking in relation to us finalizing this particular access model and get it approved before the end of the 31st of March by the minister. The next slide just deals with the vacancy rate, which I will leave at that. This is the vacancy rate in relation to the posts that have been funded, not in relation to the approved establishment. So I thought I must just make the right reference. I'll jump slide 21 and go to slide 22. Slide 22 deals specifically with a draft request for proposal which needed to be submitted to Treasury. This relates to the feasibility study for the appointment of the transaction advisor for the post of entry, and the next one was they were supposed to have a transaction advisor which had been appointed and the service level agreement finalized with the transaction advisor, which we did not achieve in the second quarter. Again, in the third quarter, we could not achieve that particular. There was some indication that the service provider that was appointed, there were a number of issues that we were raising. So in the fourth quarter, we are hoping that the minister has given us guidance in relation to say that if we are unable to finalize this service, we need to be able to start this work from scratch. So this target is at risk of not being achieved actually at the end of the current financial year. So we'll report again to the committee some of the challenges that we're faced with at the end of the calendar year, sorry, at the end of the financial year. Then the next slide, I'll go to slide 26. This refers to the vetting of officials. In the second quarter, we're supposed to vet about 109, which was, we did not achieve that, it was 102. In the third quarter, we have achieved that particular target. Again, Chair, I just want to draw reference that some of these targets which we have regarded as administrative, we are going to be moving them from the APP because they are administrative, in a sense. So we're going to move them to the operational plan of the department moving forward. But I think for now we thought we should just leave them in the APP. And then this one also deals with the media. So one of the issues is that we've got a media strategy that needs to be able to place the department strategically, in the public domain for us to be able to communicate the work that we do. So of the targets that we set ourselves for quarter two in the communication space were achieved, and those that were also in the quarter three. Now let me move to program two. Program two, there were three targets that were set there in relation to registration of beds within 30 days. Those were achieved. What the target that was not achieved in program two is a target relating to the issuance of smart cards, because we wanted to ensure that by the end of the financial year we achieve 3 million smart cards that are issued to citizens. So the second quarter target was 750,000 smart cards issued. We only issued 735,308, and we stated some of the reasons for not achieving. Some of issues relating to system instability, some of the errors, the slowness in the back office, We're saying when you look at the number of man hours lost, is that actually we lost the production of about 159,000, you know, smart cars which would have been produced and would have made us to exceed the particular target. Similarly, with quarter three, we're supposed to do 690, which is 618, you know, 1,431, which also led us to a decision that we then agreed that for the month of the entire month of February, we extended our operation, our operational hours, as part of trying to catch up. That we will close at 7, you know, every day. So we started that on Monday, the 3rd of February. We started the extension of the operational hours to say that up until Friday, the 28th. Of February, we are running extra hours in order for us to be able to catch up with this particular target. So it's a huge investment, but I think it's worthwhile. And then program three, if I go to slide 34, program three is in relation to the draft immigration bill, which again needed to be submitted to Minister for approval. There was a lot of consultation that we needed to do at the clusters, for an example, the security cluster and the GNA cluster. Some of the reasons that led for us to achieve is that some of those consultations do not only, you know, take place directly at the cluster. Clusters have got what you call development committees, which are policy committees where you submit first. So that with the DevCom for JCPS, for example, took place in August, and we were only able to go to cluster in September, and so forth with the GNA. So the scheduling also of those meetings did obviously create a challenge for us. That's why the target was not achieved. Similarly, in the third quarter, we wanted to ensure that we consult with the remaining cluster, particularly the economic cluster and NEDLAC. Again, those consultations were moved forward. We have not been able to achieve, particularly the NEDLAC one, has moved actually during the course of this week. That is why there's a NEDLAC meeting that will be considering the bill where Mr. McKay is attending this morning. Slide 35, Chair, if you'll agree, I'll just jump that and deal with slide 36. We presented when we were presenting the APP in the committee that we wanted to have a business case for the National Targeting Center, which needed to be submitted to Minister for approval, and we indicated that with the National Targeting Center serves as an intelligence hub for the purposes of immigration and will obviously be part and parcel of a technical instrument for the BMA. So we needed to do a benchmarking study, which needed to be finalized in the second quarter, but we could not achieve that. So there are reasons obvious for not achieving that. Subsequently, the service provider was brought on board, and then we were able to finalize the draft business case in the third quarter, which was submitted to the project manager. So that we are on track to achieve that in the end of the financial year. And then the next one was the BMA established as per the roadmap. Again, we came to Parliament to request that this target be discontinued because it was envisaged based when we were finalizing the APP in 1920 financial year. There were pronouncements that were made early in the year last year that the BMA bill would be finalized by June 2019. So this target was based on the fact that there was a commitment for finalization of the legislation. But because it's set, obviously, different phases, so the target was therefore discontinued and will be reintroduced again in the new APP. And then if I move now to the... So I'm going to jump on the other slide and then move to the financial reporting, which I will request then the CFO just to quickly report on the quarter two and quarter three financial performance report. I'm not sure where we... Oh, I'm not sure whether you've got the presentation sort of... Okay. Members, I will just take you to each slide because I didn't realize that the projector has actually went off. If members have got the copies in front, we are on slide 44. So I'll ask the CFO to start on slide 44.
Chairperson, may I continue?
That's correct. You can continue.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will try and be brief, as Mr. Mavosu has indicated. See, the financial information is also divided in two parts, quarter one and quarter two and quarter three. It consists of three parts. It's the budget versus expenditure report. There's a slide on 30-day payments, and then there's a slide on audit action plan in respect of each of the quarters. The 30-day payments and the audit action plan slides, Chair, are as a result of the recommendations of this committee, the 2019 BRRR reports, that we should include reports on 30-day payments as well as the audit action plan. Chair, before I conclude and forget about this, I'm confident that the department will use its full budget allocation by the end of the financial year, but let me give you the details. Slide 44, Chair, if I'll try and be lead the house in this regard as well. The budget of the department is 8.3 billion rands. This is before the appropriations bill. Of that 8.3 billion, we have spent at the end of September, that's the end of quarter two, 4.7 billion rands, or 56.7% of our budget. You'll notice on the next lines that there's Electoral Commission and the Represented Political Parties Fund. The spending there was 65.9%, Chair, so say this is transfer payments, we'll spend the full allocation. On slide 44 at the bottom, there's some line items under the heading self-financing expenditure. The total expenditure on self-financing at the end of September is 581 million rands. Chair, you'll see that there's no budget allocated for that yet because the budget allocation only comes once the appropriation bill is done, and that happens in January. If I can then go to slide 45, Chair, this is the same information but just given at a program level. Again, the budget is 8.3 billion. If you look at it at a program level, Citizen Affairs, the second line, was standing at 66.4%. The reason for that high expenditure, higher than the rest, is because of the self-financing expenditure under the program, the sub-program status services. That's where we pay GPW for the passports and IDs we produce. Chair, if we follow a linear approach, we should have been at 50% at the end of the second quarter, but we were on 56, and the reason for that higher than linear is because of the self-financing expenditure. Chair, if you've been allowed me to go slide 46, this is again the same information in respect of the second quarter, but now per economic classification. If you look at compensation of employees, the very first line item, the budget for compensation of employees is 3.5 billion. We spent 1.785 billion at the end of September. That's 50.2%, Chair, of our budget of compensation. This is also, this budget allocation is in accordance with the CEOE ceiling. So if you look at the 50.2%, Chair, you'll realize that our compensation budget is still under pressure, but it's improving, and you'll see that in the third quarter. Chair, then I'm just going to go to the exceptions. Households, the budget for households was 4.2 million, the expenditure of 15 more. The over-expending on that item is 364%. Jay, we'll fix that with journals when we get to the end of the financial year. Households is a bit unpredictable, and we do not fully budget for it. It's when people retire and resign, so that's not really clear when that happens. The same with buildings and other fixed structure, Jay, so there's some expenditure on self-financing lying under the operational side, which we will also journalize. So the 129% spend on buildings and fixed structure is not a concern at this point in time, Chair. Okay, Chair, slide 47 deals with the expenditure at the provincial level. You'll see that all the provinces are more or less at 50%. The only exception is Northern Cape at 44.9%. And then there was 51.7, Gauteng was slightly over. Chair, from my perspective, the provinces are spending according to their projections, and they should spend their full allocations at the end of the financial year. Chair, the next slide, so the self-financing one I've dealt with in that very first slide, so it's the 581 million rands expenditure, so we spend it on counter-corruption, we spend it on property status services, so that's for passports and ID, and then who am I online, that 1 million, that was a wrong allocation, Chair, so because I didn't get any money this year for self-financing. Chair, slide number 49 is the revenue collected. For September, what we collected at local offices only, Chief, is the 56.2 million rands. The total collected at local offices thus far is 355 more. That's at the end of September. Our target is 1.2 billion rands. So we're also on target to collect that full amount at the end of the financial year, Chief. Okay, Chief. Then slide 50 is the 30-day payments. Jay, you'll see that if you look at, there's a third blue column, percentage performance, it's 99.53%. So 99.53% of all invoices are paid within 30 days. For September, there were 12 invoices not paid within 30 days, and the total rand value of those invoices is 135,717 rands. You'll see that in the last column. So, Chair, we're trying to manage our 30-day payments. We take disciplinary action when people do not pay their invoices within 30 days. In some instances, there are valid reasons, but those we then record. But it's still, we make sure that our invoices get paid within 30 days. So, Chair, the next slide is slide 51, is our audit action plan. This is a summary sheet, Chair. There's a whole document underneath this. It gives you an indication that there are 154 actions in light of the previous audit report from the AG. It's assigned to individuals. You'll see our names are there, the total findings per unit. Then there's a column that indicates completed, others in progress, a future date, and then there's one not started or overdue. So we monitor this on a bi-weekly basis, Jay, and report at EXCO and MMM on progress against this action plan to make sure that we address the AG findings. Chair, I must point out that this audit action plan is a living document. We add items as and when the AG raises issues. So if you compare this slide to the last slide that's coming, you'll see that the other slide will have more actions. So we have added some more actions to this one. So, Chair, if you may now allow me to go to slide 54. This is now the picture as at the end of December. At the end of December, if you follow a linear projection, you should get to 75%. We cannot apply the linear projection route in all cases, but for compensation of employees, we can at least do that. Chair, if I'm on slide 54, under current budget, you will notice that the budget is 8.339 billion rands. It's the same as on slides as for quarter two. The budget didn't change there. Expenditure at the end of December is 82%. If we did the linear, it would have been 75%. Now you'll also see, Chair, that Citizen Affairs, the second program, is at 106% spent. This is because of self-financing. And if you go to the bottom of that slide, Chair, you will now notice that self-financing expenditure has risen to 802 million rands in the third quarter. The Electoral Commission and them are now sitting at 82 and 75% respectively. So, Chair, on those transfer payments, I'm quite sure they'll make sure that they get all their money. So that should not be a problem from this expenditure point of view. Chair, slide number 55 gives the same information again. It's just per program. I've already dealt with the 95s and the 65. The 92% for Citizen Affairs years is slightly different to the previous slide, Chair. And this is just because we did the self-financing. Chair, slide 56. Now you'll see on buildings and fixed structures that the expenditure is now on 236%. It's 50 mil over. As I indicated, that will be done through a journal to self-financing so that this expenditure gets aligned and the full allocation is spent. compensation of employees is at 74%. So it shows, Chair, that the pressure on our compensation of employees' budget is slightly decreasing. It used to be 50.2% at quarter two, 74% now, so there's some space growing, Chair, for compensation of employees, and this is as a result of us not filling any posts. We haven't filled any posts since January 2016, with a couple of exceptions which we can count on our hands, Chair. Departmental agencies and accounts is 81%, goods and services 94%. That should reduce once we do the self-financing expenditure. Household share is now 18 mil, up to 431%. So, Chair, as I'm saying, I do not want the House to worry about that figure. We'll make sure that the budget is aligned by doing the journals when we get to the end of the financial year. Slide 56, Chair, this is now just the detail per branch and per subdirectorate. You can see who's spending on this. So, Chair, this is just detail of the expenditure as at the end of December. I'm not going to go into detail there, Chair, so perhaps just let me give one example. Under corporate services, the first line item on page 57, communication, the budget is 67 more, we have spent 30 more, it equates to 45% spent. And you can see that for all the others, Chair. On 58, slide 58, citizen affairs, the same story, Chair. We have all the sub-programs, citizen affairs management, the electoral commission buys over two transfer payments, identification services, status services, and self-financing. Chair, we have split status services and self-financing from this slide. Otherwise, status services would have shown a huge overspend if we add that 675 more spending on self-financing to status services where it actually resorts. On slide 59, the provinces, they are on average, which we are on 74%. So again, Chair, the provinces are spending according to plan projections. They are as close to linear as you can get. Slide 60, that's immigration services. Chair, they're also doing well. They're slightly over if you follow linear. But there's also no reason for concern in respect of immigration services. All of this expenditure is, if you look at it, at 77%, it's really well managed, Chair. Thanks. Chair, I'm now on slide 61. Revenue collection. For November, the revenue collection was 58 million. It's slightly down from the previous, from the September figure, Chair. The total collected is 531 mil. That's up till the end of, and again, Chair, I'm saying to you, this is local revenue only. It doesn't include foreign revenue and doesn't include our e-home affairs payment channels. So that we add at the end of the financial year. Chair, slide 62 is the 30-day payments for at the end of December. At the end of December, our performance declined in comparison to quarter two from 99.9% to 99.11%. There were 16 invoices to a value of 1.076 million not paid within 30 days. There was one big one, the 906 million, it's an IT invoice, Chair, which was not paid within 30 days. As I said, Chair, we're dealing with those invoices not being paid within 30 days and make sure that the people, Chair, I want to give assurance that these invoices are paid, but they're not paid within 30 days. So it's not as though we never pay them. And we deal with them as we, as and when they arise and when we report. The last one, Chair, is slide, I think it's 64, Chair, the green, yellow, red one, on the audit action plan at the end of December. There you'll notice that there are now 161 actions per unit. 33 actions are completed. The completion rate is a bit slow. A lot of actions are in progress, and a lot of them sitting with future dates, which is the 31st of March, which is the end of the financial year. Again, there's only one action not dealt with, and that was because of a procurement issue. But that one is also now resolved. So that's the end from my side. So I think I can just conclude by giving the House the assurance that we will do everything within our power to make sure that we spend our full allocation come the end of the financial year, that we will not have any unauthorized expenditure. We'll do everything within our power.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson and members. Just to indicate that obviously we do also report some of the critical challenges that continue to face us. We did raise the issue of capacity, I think, on several occasions. That's why I even said we rely on third parties, particularly on the agreement that we had with SARS. And the fact that we are now seeing a window of opportunity for us to be able to fill some of the critical IT positions. We have advertised a few positions, so from the 1st of April, we'll be filling some positions within the IT space also. So I thought I must just raise that with that 74% breed that our CFO was reporting on. So we're going to be doing that. Secondly, I've talked about the issue of dependency. We do have issues in relation to the instability of IT systems. We are working on that to try and ensure that we improve our applications in order for us to be able to deal with that. And also the issues relating to some of the unlawful activities which, you know, we are trying to deal with in relation with the current counter-corruption units, particularly in relation to fraudulent visas and other fraudulent documents that get issued not by the department, but people who issue fake documents, you know, to unsuspecting clients who also, I think, because of inability to access certain services in certain areas, they become actually, you know, gullible and get them robbed by, you know, unscrupulous people. But moving forward, Chairperson, as I've said, we will do our best to do resource reprioritization, push for the completion of the modernization program, and also ensure that we continue the improvement of governance and administrative practices for us to be able to get clean audit, for us to be able to clamp down on wrongdoings, for us to be able to improve the image of the organization, and also fighting fraud and corruption. But our biggest trump card also to finalize the PMA bill, sorry, the DHA bill, so that we can be able to complete our repositioning process. So, Chairperson, that's what we intended to present to the committee, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Chairperson, may I just take the House to slide 22. Can I take you back to slide 22? About the issue of which we the report says was not achieved on the issue of appointing a transactional advisor. As you heard, Mr. Mabuso said there were problems with the transitional advisor, and the minister advised that we start the process from the beginning. Let me explain, Chairperson. The issue of appointing a transitional advisor for this is a treasury requirement, because the procurement is going to be a very complex issue. It's not a small issue, because this deals with the upgrading of our 6 ports of entry, the thing we call the one-stop border post. That includes Bay Bridge. If you look at how complex the issue of Bay Bridge is, you remember that even the African Union is involved as part of the North-South Corridor. When the President was in AU 2 weeks back, this was one of the reports he gave. So we are going to be doing transactions across the borders with other countries, including the private sector. You need a very experienced transactional advisor. So we opted for one of the South Africa's biggest auditing firms, and we got that. The reason that it was not finalized yet and not achieved, they were putting lots and lots of legal impediments and demands which we had to meet. And I eventually said, no, let's leave them and start from this beginning. But fortunately, I want to announce, which Mr. Mavuso did not know about because I didn't tell anybody. Yesterday, very late yesterday, we were told that the transactional advisor eventually signed. So there's no need to start from the scratch because they've eventually agreed on the legalities and all that of this issue. We agreed that it's complex, but we're getting worried that it's taking too long. So he signed. So what Mr. Mavuso said about us going to start from the beginning is not going to happen anymore. Progress, I mean, work is now going to be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, members. You have been listening attentively. Can I note hands that want to ask questions or comments? Lizelle, is your hand up? We'll start with the Honorable Lizelle and followed by Honorable Ross, followed by Honorable McClover, and then we'll come this way, we'll come that way until Honorable Chabane. Before you start, Honorable Chabane wants to raise the point of before.
No, Chair, I just wanted to satisfy our understanding. Now that the minister and the DG are presenting different matters, that the matter has been presented as written, is the report in other details clear so that members who must not interface with the an arrangement on the board, so that we are able to be clear. You see, the report raises a particular matter, and the minister announced progress, which I assume could have done with the team before. I don't get the understanding whether the report is properly been presented before we get into the discussion. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Minister.
No, Chairperson, it is. All I was reporting is I sat with the team for the whole of the morning before, on the day of Swan. The whole of the morning, we're going through this report, and we accept it as a team and myself as a minister. But I was just reporting that late yesterday, when the team was already gone, it was not there. I heard that the impediment to this huge issue has been resolved because the big auditing firm has now signed after all the legal impediments. I just thought it's important for me to inform the committee when it's still fresh, because I didn't even have time to meet the team. It happened late last night and we had to fly here. But otherwise, the rest of the report, we are in full agreement because we went through it together. Thank you.
Just to add on that, Chair, we're reporting as of what transpired as at the end of the third quarter. So the developments that the minister refers to technically will be officially reported in the fourth quarter at the end. So for the purposes of this report, that information is new information that does not impact the report. Thanks.
Can we start?
Chairperson, but I sorry for dialogue. I just thought it's important because I don't want members, this is a huge project which will also involve EU, for you to go away believing something is stuck and only come in here at the end. I just thought while it's still fresh, I need to put you in our confidence that actually this work is going on, the impediment has been cleared, and the DG is right, it couldn't be part of this because it will appear in the last quarter report.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Honorable Lizan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and all the colleagues. First and foremost, thank you very much for the presentations. I think really I would like to say that the you know, the rollout of the e-visas as well as the e-gates at our ports of entry are very important, Minister, because during the holiday period, for example, and I know the presentation is not dealing with the holiday period, but we saw at gates of entry at OR Tambo and Cape Town International Airport very long queues of people trying to enter South Africa, and often they were met by desks that were manned by one or two people. And unfortunately, this contributes to the negative public sentiments towards the department, because people take to social media to complain either about the long queues or, and, you know, in some instances, the bad service that they're getting. I wanted to ask, in terms of the e-visa rollout, on slide 15, I wanted to ask what informed your decision to start with Kenya, India, and Nigeria, for example? Those four countries. What type of is it, because these are nationalities or countries that most visit South Africa, or what informed that target, or, you know, starting with those missions as you previously spoke to? On corruption, slide 24, we speak about a target met. Let me just get to that slide, and we must commend you for that. But I would be interested to know, out of the 45, out of the 68 cases that you dealt with, the 66.2% on slide 24, how many of these resulted in dismissals or prosecutions? And again, Minister, it's because often people, when they talk about Home Affairs, it's not in a complimentary way, because they feel that officials are generally corrupt or bribable. So I would like to know how many of those resulted in prosecutions or dismissals. And I also think that when we do work in terms of corruption or fighting corruption at Home Affairs, that we become a little bit more vocal in terms of our media campaigns in putting that message out there. So that we try to start to address the issue, because if we're not talking about the successes that we're achieving in terms of fighting corruption, then the public won't know, and those entrenched sentiments about the department being corrupt will prevail. So maybe if you can just give us some figures in that regard. On slide 5, Minister, we speak about your strategic objectives, and you speak about refugees and asylum seekers, and you say that one of your objectives are to manage and document officially refugees and asylum seekers. But I would argue that, in fact, this specific system of asylum seeking and refugees has collapsed. And that is, in fact, why we saw the crisis that we saw at Cape Town, and why we see people doing as they please in Pretoria and here in the church. And it's not only a perception, but in fact the AG also says that your systems in terms of processing asylum seekers or refugees have actually collapsed. So my question would want, I would want to ask, and then in fact if you go to the section on paragraph 3, you are quiet about any issues pertaining to refugees and asylum seekers. So I would really like to know, in quarter 2 and 3, how many asylum seeking applications were finalized? And I would like to know, temporary asylum seeking permits, how many are currently in circulation? How many people in South Africa operate within the borders on temporary asylum seeking permits? And how many have been not adjudicated or finalized for a period more than 5 years? So maybe if you can give me that information, as well as how many were finalized in quarter 2 and 3. When we go to slide 35 on the law enforcement operation inspections, again, it's a target achieved. You've been able to do 56 law enforcement operations. But again, I'm worried, Minister, because it translates into 2 or 3 operations. You know, it's maybe 2 or 3 per week. I would argue we'd need many more. We've got a very big country. So again, is there any way of, or will the department be looking at increasing your operations and inspections going forward, considering some of the challenges that we are facing? On slide 51, we speak about the audit action plan, and there's slide 51, supply chain management, and then there's a person responsible for auditing some of these, or for actioning some of these plans, and it's a Ms. Tandeka Nobo, and there's one indication there of that she has not started or one of those action plans are overdue, if we can just get some clarity on that. And finally, on slide 61, we talk about penalties that have been collected. I would like to know if any of these penalties that have been collected have been from the airlines that owe you millions in terms of bringing in undocumented migrants into the country. So if we talk about the money that's been collected there, does it refer to any of the airlines that owe us a lot of money? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the other presenters. I'll be fairly brief this time. First of all, in terms of the administration, I think it's a very positive thing, this accessibility study. Because what it allows us to do is to say that this is it allows us to use evidence-based planning. And when we ask for money to say, we've gone out there, we know where the offices are, we know how many people are not served, and we know what we need. So it's a very positive step indeed. What I'd like to understand with that, though, is are the health facilities included in that? Or is it just physical Department of Home Affairs facilities? Then in terms of just some of the audit requirements, I'd like to understand the CIO. It was a very big audit red flag with the IT controls. And IT governance. Has the CIO been appointed? What is the process in that regard? Just to address that concern of the AG in the annual report. Then we also discussed repeat offenders in terms of submitting audit information to the Auditor General. So on the meeting of the 8th of October, the Minister committed to go and find out who the individuals involved were and to engage with them and to come back to the committee. So I'd just like to understand what happened in that regard, in terms of that specifically the people that were highlighted by the AG that were submitting incorrect information year after year. Then in terms of the immigration side of things, so again, there's a number of activities, and I see there's an emphasis on the trucking situation. So my question is, has there also been targeted initiatives towards traders in metropolitan municipalities? Because that was another reason that was given for some of the flare-ups that we saw in recent times, was the fact that the undocumented migrants are competing with us in these spaces. And then in terms of the Refugee Appeals Board, we heard 2 weeks ago that there's a 68-year backlog, and now with the new regulations we'd be able to get going. So my question is just, where are we exactly in that regard? Also in terms of the time frames of getting rid of the backlog. And then linked to that, is there going to be an additional budget next year for deportations? Because what's going to happen is, as soon as you are processing more and more of these and they get rejected, then they're going to go into the system where they need to be transported to the repatriation center and expatriated. But the question is just in terms of the budget, that's, you know, the increased deportation demand, how is that going to be handled? And then linked to that as well, the transportation tenders, in terms of that whole process of deporting, is there a transportation tender now in place for the internal transport? So from where people are detained to Lindela, and then also out of the country. And then finally on immigration, the Visa Facilitation Services contract expires at the end of this year. I'd just like an update on the progress of that. Are we going to make it in terms of, or how is the process going to work in terms of having that service going into 2021? Then in terms of finance, I see that there's 1.1 million rand in fines collected, if I understand it correctly. So it seems like quite a low amount. So my question is, are the fines to the conveyance that are bringing in people that are undocumented, is that included in that? And what is the reason? It seems quite a low amount compared to, let's say, even 2017, when it was about 17 million that was being brought in. Then on page 63, we look at the audit outcomes, and there's only one in the red, and that is in supply chain management. So I'd just like to understand, what is that audit item that has not been addressed at all?
And the other question is, in terms of these that are either underway or with a future date, will these all be achieved, or what are the risk areas that we are looking at for not complying with those audit outcomes? In terms of the BMA budget, so naturally the BMA has probably been delayed slightly more than envisaged. So my question is there a spare BMA budget, and has the process been undertaken to defer that to the next financial year? And then finally, just from a passports point of view, I'd just like to congratulate the department. I think it's a really fantastic achievement. You know, 99%, 97% within that amount of time. It really shows progress in that regard. But I think it's partly goes down to the addition of additional resources. So my question in that regard is just, you know, going back to the opening the offices on the Saturdays, what is the progress in that regard? Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Ross. I wonder what has made Honorable McClover to change the chairs. But you're also welcome, Honorable McClover.
Thanks, Chair. There's no budget for a microphone that size.
Okay.
That's why I moved.
All right.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I want to join my colleagues and also want to say, with specific reference to the senior staff within the organization, which is very helpful to us as members when we attempt to intervene where we have a crisis. I want to also speak to the outcome two on program three when it comes to the refugees. And I think by now all of us is aware that there are problems, and I think the biggest problem here is the access control, where we have a lack of presence of SANDF, where we have a lack of maintenance on our fences and everything that goes along, because some of these refugees are forced to leave their countries, and just recently some has been evicted here in Cape Town, and perhaps if it's possible for the minister or the director to speak out on this, and what is the department's role as far as this is concerned, if you read the outcome too and also read within what is transpiring in Program 3. Now, aligned to Program 3, I have visited the refugees office here in Cape Town, and a day after SONA, 4 o'clock in the morning, I fetched some of my colleagues at the hotel to go back to Joburg. Surprisingly so, there were still people walking through the refugee office who is expected to have moved long ago. There's a court order. There's a ruling that the office have to move within 6 months. It never happened. I have played an oversight role to that office. One. Two, I've also been informed that the office, the building is going to move. Three, after all of this, I have made my investigation and found that there was a delay in the contract for the building lease. More surprisingly, and this is also linking to the financial aspect and link what Honorable Liesel has said to corruption. The delays, therefore, there are rumors, and perhaps it can also be confirmed here, that a tender was issued to someone who didn't own the building. That was the reason for this delay. Now, it really raised the eyebrows that someone who don't own the building, and there's no repercussions in terms of this contract and the rental agreement. He went out, he rented building, and now it seemed that there was a contract agreement that people are now renting from him. Now, in 2017, the very same Home Affairs has lost a court application and relating to the very same office. So it is quite frustrating if we would like to assist or have a fully functioned refugee office we need to beef up. And if you listen to the director, there's quite a number, numerous of indicators that has not been reached by this department, and that really raised concern. So I would suggest that we address that as soon as possible. I want to speak to the question of the financial aspect, whereby indication has been given that there are disciplinary actions against those who fail to pay 30 days. I must say I'm having a case currently in the Northwest where I come from where there is a problem with this. I'm happy to give it to the necessary powers that be. But I am also inquisitive as a member to see this list of who has been disciplined within the organization who is failing us in this regard. Then I want to speak to the hours that are being lost by the department. Also mentioning is the 207,000 applications that has been lost, and this is due to offline and online. And perhaps just as a sweetener in this meeting, indicate to us what is the status as far as the backup is concerned, because we have addressed this all the time, and we would like to know what is the CITA's role also in this upgrading and stuff is concerned. Then I want to go to the issue of the budget constraints within the department. If the minister will remember, we as the committee has visited the printing GPW, and we have been told by their representatives that some of the profits are going to National. And this committee has made a decision, or rather a quest, to the minister to engage with the powers that be to see to what extent they can assist and channel some of those profit that they are making there to the Department of Home Affairs. And then there's a last issue of real great concern for me, and we all know the history of Who Am I Online. If we look at what is transpiring on Who Am I Online, there's an underspending. I don't know for what reason, and we know there was a lot of allegations on corruption on the Who Am I Online saga. And there was also indication in some presentation that this Who Am I Online will be completed this year. Can we, as a committee, get assurance as to whether that project will be finalized and completed this year? Thank you.
Honorable Kanyeda. Honorable Olekwa.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will go to page 31, where the previous speakers spoke about the instability for loss of application and also due to the systems. Chairperson, can the DG break to us in which provinces did the applications were lost and all of those things, because of you are only giving us a number here? And then how are we going to make sure that we are going to get back these people? They must come back and apply, because of it's a lot here, it's a lot. And this thing is been happening, and can you also explain also to us, due to the to load shedding, did this also occur due to load shedding or what else? And also on page, can you also go to page 20, Chairperson? On page 20, we talk about the vacancy rate. The last time on our committee, you spoke about the DG, the appointment of the DG, and also the acting DG. How far are we on those appointments? And also on finance, I can see that there is an expenditure on private leases of 56% as at the end of the third quarter, but the department offices expenditure stands at 128. Can you also explain that one to us? And also on this one, the National Treasury also indicates we have a serious budget constraint in the compensation of employees. Now, I'm asking you a question. Are you guys going to shift the money from the good services and take it to the compensation side? And then how is this going to affect our goods and services departments? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chairman, Honorable Mwela, was your hand up? Okay, Honorable Chairman.
No, thanks, Chair. I think all some of the issues are already being captured. I want also to join to those that appreciate the work that has been done so far in both the second quarter and the third quarter in terms of the improvement around the targets. There are two issues, Chair, that I think the department perhaps may need to elevate. In our last the last presentation, there was an issue around CETA, its shortcomings, and that impedes on the work of the department in terms of the line function. And if the department can able to elevate those areas that they've been able to contribute to some of the targets that the department has not managed to reach. The second one, which is last year, is the audit outcome that has been presented. I'm more interested on the management account, what are the key areas that have been highlighted that are arising from the third quarter and from the second quarter and the third quarter report that the department must work on, and those that they've achieved within that context of the management account. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, members. Minister, over to you and the team.
Thank you very much. I will answer some of the questions and obviously the most technical ones. I'll give them over to the team, starting with questions by Honorable Lizelle van der Merwe, asking in the e-visa why four countries have been targeted. We have been negotiating with Kenya for a long time, and we believe going to pilot with them will be much easier because of the relationships and the agreement we've been having with them. Now, the other countries, especially India, China, and Nigeria, are countries that were unable, for other reasons which of course are not the subject of today, to give them visa-free entry in South Africa. And all we wanted was to facilitate easier receiving of visas. And the three countries constitute 30% of the world population. That's why we're studying with them. Once you finalize with them by April, you have covered 30% of the world population. And then from there, will roll it out to other countries. That's why specifically we chose these three countries. If it was possible, we'll just say visa-free entry, but you are aware that to issue a visa-free entry, there are many other complex issues that are looked at. The second question from Honorable van der Merwe was that we must project, you know, we must communicate our achievements whenever we deal with corruption. I think I agree with you. We agree with you fully. We have already seen that weakness, that people regard Home Affairs as a department where corruption is very rife, and we agree with you. That's why we have got the DDG under corruption, and we have agreed that wherever these things come, we will start informing you more than what we've been doing now. The question about the collapse in processing of immigration or refugee matters, Honorable van der Merwe, is a pity
you were not here last week or 2 weeks back when the Auditor General was reporting about the performance audit, because we considered that it is true there are problems, but we also give out the program of what you are doing to resolve it. Now, we reject in total that the system has collapsed. It has got problems, but we can't call that a collapse as such. And because we actually gave a detailed account of what we are going to do, for instance, the amendments of the Act, the changing of legislation on SCRA, you know, adding more people and hiring more people than the committee has, making sure that they are all lawyers. You remember there was a quarter whereby if they are not three, they can't sit. In the new regulations which you have just issued in December, that has been put away. But, Honorable van der Merwe, I want to emphasize again and again and again that because you are linking what's happening in the church here, in Methodist church here, with this what you call collapse in the immigration system, I want to repeat again and again, there is absolutely no relationship, absolutely not, because if you want to understand what was the issues there, go and read the judgment that has been passed yesterday. The judge went to very great length to give a history of this problem, outlining in full details what led to this situation and what has happened. And you can go and read it there. Even during the hearing, nobody mentioned these problems about home affairs, immigration system having collapsed. Because the demand there was very, very different. That is why, which I've listened to the media, everybody tried to ignore that. The judge even awarded us cost. We were responded number 8 in that court case. We were responded number 8. They awarded cost to us because we were not supposed to have been brought there, because it was an issue dealing with bylaws. And the demand of those refugees was not on home affairs, was on the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, that they want to be taken to another country, not South Africa. And their complaint was not home affairs. They were complaining about the whole country. Even yesterday they were talking about that, that the whole country was xenophobic, we don't want people to come here. Even the judge was called xenophobic yesterday because of the ruling that he has made. And so that those were the issues. And the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees tried it best to come here and inform them that the demand they are putting, nobody can meet. When they did not believe it, we said, let's send men of the cloth, ministers of religion, including the Archbishop of Cape Town, Anglican Archbishop of Cape Town, Archbishop Thabo Makgoba, and Bishop Peter Story, and Reverend Nissen from the Human Rights Commission, and other men of the cloth. You remember they were assaulted. They were going there to deliver the message that, look, what you are asking for, this is what the United Nations is saying. I also took liberty to inform my counterpart in Namibia, because one of the demands was that we escort them to the border with Namibia. Then they will enter and feel safe, because this is not a safe country. I informed him not to be surprised when something like that happened. And he told me point blank that they will lodge a very strong diplomatic complaint if we dare, or any entity in South Africa, can escort people to the Namibian border. And then 3 days later, he put it in writing that this is not going to happen, this is not acceptable, we're not welcoming anybody here under those conditions. Then 66 of the people from here escaped into Namibia using trucks that convey cross-border trucks. And the minister wrote me a second letter and said, we are bringing them back because they come from your soil and they are not going to be in Namibia. And we want you to accept them back, because there's no way that you could transfer your problems over to Namibia. So all those things have got nothing to do with what Home Affairs is doing and is not doing. It's about me wishing to go to Canada or any other country. Then in January, there was an OECD conference in Paris, which I attended. The Deputy Minister of Immigration and Refugee Affairs
in Canada was there. I asked for an official meeting with her and her team, and I put this story in front of the Canadians, and they told me straight that, no, this is not going to happen. This is not how things are done in Canada. I even asked them, can you put it in writing, please? Last week, we were still asking the Canadian ambassador, can you put it in writing so that people understand, because they don't believe us, that these are the international rules. So the whole saga has got nothing to do with the performance audit, which the auditor general has released, and they've given us 65 recommendations, and we are going to follow them. That we need many more operations per week. We will somehow agree with you, but gradually, because our approach here is that these operations is about cleaning up something that has already gone wrong. Our approach will be if we concentrate our efforts on the implementation of the Border Management Authority, and we are happy that the committee here has finalized the issue and is going to the National Assembly, because that's what is holding us back. So that you don't have to go around sniffing for people, you deal with them as they arrive at the borders. Even if they are refugees, they get recorded somewhere there at the border. The aim of the BMA is not to stop people from coming to South Africa, as many people think. It's that when people come, they must come in an orderly fashion, they must be recorded somewhere, we must know about their presence, we must take their fingerprints and their details, as we are, or as we have done with other South Africans. The Minister of Police was angry with me after a policeman was killed in Deep Slot. And when they arrested the people who killed him, and they, after taking fingerprints, they found that they can't trace them to anywhere. And they came angrily to the Department of Home Affairs and said, but what is it? Who are these people? We went to the border gates, we went to the refugee reception centers, went everywhere to check if these people are recorded there. They are recorded nowhere. They exist in the country, but they are basically not existing. Now, people always misquote the United Nations Convention of 1951. It clearly says, when a person comes to a country at the border, legally or illegally, if they declare that they are asylum seekers or they are going to apply for refugee status, you can't stop them. Even at the border, they say, even if you see them or you talk to them, you can't stop them if they declare. But this, it goes on to say, provided they will present themselves at a nearest refugee reception center within a reasonable period. And now in South Africa, we describe that reasonable period as 5 days, that you give them a permit to come in South Africa illegally, but in 5 days' time, they must appear at the reception center. And when they appear there, they are immediately given a Section 22 notice to say, I mean, permit, to say you are here illegally, but you are going to apply for refugee and all that. We are giving you 3 to 6 months to try and do that. So this is how this issue is done. The audit issue on penalties, I'll leave it to the team here, and as well as the first question by Honorable Ruas about the facilities and the CIO, the issue of refugee appeal board, again, Honorable Ruas, you say there's a 68 years backlog. That's not how the Auditor General put it exactly. It might sound nicer to put it that way. He said at this pace, if nothing changes, will take 68 years to clear this backlog. That's what he said. And we accepted that, yes, this is true. That's why we've changed the regulations to make sure that doesn't happen. And what have we done? Just a few things which I want to repeat. Number one, that the SCRA, the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs, was following the legislation by saying there must be a quota when they sit. And every time three people sit, it's like going to court and demanding what do you call full bench. In every case, the legal system will get clogged if there's a full bench, but unfortunately, the legislation demands that in Home Affairs. It has now been amended, we've issued new regulations, no more full bench. In addition, the previous legislation was saying the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs of 5 people, only the chairperson must be a lawyer. In the new regulations, it said all 5 of them must be lawyers. so that they can have the capacity to sit alone. Only when a case is complex or is special, then the chairperson will demand a full bench, like it happens in the justice system. That's what we have put. The third thing we have put is that because that committee serves for 5 years, that at any one time, the minister can alter that committee. The minister can decide that there is a lot of work, let me add additional people for 6 months or 1 year or whatever period to help expedite, and then they'll go away after, you know, things have normalized. The minister can also reduce the size of the committee. And we have asked, even from the Auditor General, that we need a four-year program to clear this backlog, not 68 years. And we have developed that program, and it's there, to say in the next 4 years, this is how we are going to clear the backlog using the new legislation. So definitely it won't take 68 years. Additional budget for deportation. Well, it sounds very nice if the Minister of Finance would say, I'm giving you additional budget to deport people, and you can only use it for that. I don't think I'll jump for joy. Not because it's not good to have a good budget, but because it's like putting water into a leaking budget. Bucket. You are aware that our biggest problem is that people get deported and they come back because of this issue of border management. So we'll rather, if we get any more money, we'll rather put it in the border management authority to make sure that we don't have lots of people who need to be deported, because we can't run immigration policy just through deportation. So that will be my answer to the issue of additional budget. The finances, I'll again leave it to the committee. Honorable McClure, the issue of access control is BMA, I've already answered. The issue of Cape Town refugee office is quite unfortunate. And I'm wondering why Honorable McClure said he had to do his own investigation. Because I thought we have given that information publicly. We have. Maybe you might have missed it and start investigating. Your investigation was a duplication of what they've already been given in public, yes. Because the unfortunate thing here is that, remember, this is a court ruling, and we can't be in contempt of court. It's a court ruling that we must relocate that office and put it in another area, and we had to respect that court ruling. But in respecting it, we had to go to Public Works. That is the one that always looks for offices for us. And unfortunately, they are the ones who put us in this position, where an office was identified. One of the litigants was Stella Brini. We even gave a program to them that, no, you a litigant in this matter, please, because they were threatening to go to court and say we are in contempt. We gave them a document showing the plan, the program, that at this juncture, we have got an office at this juncture, it needs to be customized on this month, this is what will happen. After presenting to them, the person who got this contract demanded something that is never done. That if we did it, you're going to sit here and query us, because the Auditor General was not going to agree. He then said no. He wants to be paid even before the work is done, before customization, meaning pay me before I start doing work. You are aware that you don't look at those things very nicely. And of course, we had to refuse. So we are starting from the scratch to look for another host, another person who will host the office. This was quite very unfortunate. We don't like it, but unfortunately that is what happened. As to whether it's because the person who was giving this tender did not have capacity and is corruption, we won't deny, we won't challenge that. Public Works can answer that, exactly why they awarded that tender to that particular person, what is his capacity. But all we know is that it happened in Public Works, but it's damaging us, because there's no office there, and we are looked at if we are in contempt of court when we are not. The issue of GPW, I'm sure Honorable McClure, you wanted to say the profits are going to National Treasury. I just heard you say National, and I was waiting for the next word, and then it didn't come. I'm sure you want to say National Treasury. Yes, that's true. It goes to National Treasury, and most of the money comes from us. It is a problem for us. And it's a lot of money. Remember, while everybody is very much depressed about government owned entities. I've repeated many times that the government printing work is one government entity that is working very well. In the previous financial year, it was able to send a profit of 500 million back to Treasury. They can even teach SAA, if it's needed, how it's done. In the financial year ending now, they were going to hire 105 extra people, buy equipment worth half a billion, but still send more than 100 million rand to Treasury. So it's an entity that is working very well. And we are happy that it's a state entity that is working so well. At the moment, we are busy discussing with the Namibian government if we could do some of the work for them, because we want to service people here in our neighbors here within the African continent. We need to do trade with each other. So, but as to whether the Treasury will agree that the money be left in Home Affairs, I'm not sure whether that will ever be accepted, because they always come with new rules that anybody who collects money must bring it to Treasury and it be distributed. I know it. We once tried, when I was in health, that the money collected by any hospital, can it be plowed back for the hospital to improve themselves? They said, no, if everybody who collects revenue can demand that, then there will be no central revenue. The Minister of Finance will have no budget to talk about, because everybody will keep in the corner whatever they collect. So that's where we are. Lastly, I think the issues are done. Yes, I'm left with yes, the officials will take the rest. No, there was a question about appointment of DG. That's mine, yes. The process has started. Last week, a shortlisting has been done, and all I can say is that process has started. Thanks. Okay, that you'll answer the team will answer the rest.
No, thanks, Minister. I think there was a question around the issue of access and increasing our access, that it will actually include hospitals. In the current financial year, we had about, if I'm not mistaken, around 44, which was the target, which we have now since increased to 70, which means we still have about more than 30 more hospitals that still need to be connected. The other issue dealing with access is around the issue of our trucks, our mobile units, which have been connected. We have used them in a number of other rural areas, which also increase our impact, and we are going to be using them in more specific focus to schools, because they are able to then deal with the target that we have not actually achieved. If you look at the above 16 years, which are mainly in schools, and each truck at some point when we tested it in the Northern Cape recently was able to do about 290 learners, just one truck on a single day, which means it is a very an effective way of doing it. With regards to opening up on Saturdays, we are in discussion in terms of special programs with our civics branch to look at specific days in which we can then open. But it's not a permanent arrangement that we will just be opening on each and every Saturday. It will be on special project days where we are going to be targeting learners in the main. And I think you will understand our shortage of staff and the issue of weekends coming with a lot of overtime payments and so on. Thanks.
And sorry, just before, I'm very sorry, I apologize. In fact, I want to report to the committee that I've already met the Minister of Basic Education, and we have agreed a program is going to be developed, which in Home Affairs will be run by the Deputy Minister here. And in Basic Education, they will also give the Deputy Minister, Dr. Mahaul, that we must run a program whereby school kids are no longer allowed to go to Home Affairs office during school hours to go and take IDs. That program will go to schools, as the Deputy Minister has outlined, and make sure that kids stay at school, but they go there to take IDs or whatever, and it will be in rotation. So at the moment, we are still drawing the program, The limitation there is that we only have 100 trucks. That serves far away communities with no access and all the schools. It's a lot of work, but that's a program we want to see exactly how it's going to work. And the minister said, me and her will announce it publicly if the plan is put here, and we can see exactly how is it going to work, what resources will it need. Thank you very much.
Sure, thank you very much. I'd like to request the CFO and the Chief Director of Immigration to deal with the outstanding questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, slide 51, the one about the audit action plan. The item that was that's in the red column, not started or overdue, it's an overdue item. So it's not as though it hasn't started. It was supposed to have been done. It's the appointment of a service provider to conduct an audit on our ABIS CETA procurement process. Now, Chair, for that we needed documents from CETA. We needed the files from CETA. So the due date was 1st of October. It came and went, Chair. So we're not going to change this not started overdue. It remains overdue. We can't then keep on moving the due dates and then add them to the audit action plan to make it look green. We didn't achieve that target at that point in time. That service provider has now been appointed. The report is expected within 60 days. That will take us into April. We need that report to finalize irregular expenditure under investigation, and it relates to the ABIS contract. So, Chair, it's a serious issue for us. It must be done, and the AG has also reported to us that they expect us to provide them with that report. They're not going to take our word for it. They need an independent auditor to look at that transaction. Chair, the second one is slide 61, the one about penalties collected. Yes, we do collect from airlines, Chair, but I'm also saying that we're not collecting as much as we should. We have challenges with our collection of our fines and penalties at airlines, as the AG has reported. That challenge is still there. We don't have an automated system. We're trying to manage that situation by doing our reconciliations between the fines imposed and the revenue collection, and then issuing letters of demand to the airlines who are not paying us back. But those airlines do have the right of appeal and to ask for waiver of these fees, and some of them do make use of that. So it's also not a simple issue, but we are dealing with that one, Chair. Okay, Chair. Minister and Deputy Minister has dealt with the health facilities. I'll ask one of my colleagues to deal with the CIO post. I'm not in a position to do that. Then there's also there was a question from Mr. the Honourable Ruiz about the repeat offenders on 30 days, Chair. What do we do with them if people submit incorrect information? Chair, it's also a difficult issue. So we're trying. It's no use charging a person that collates the information from external sources and say, you have submitted a wrong report to the AG and therefore we had a material adjustment to our financials. That person gets the information from various sources. So we need to, from our side, need to make sure that our collection and verification processes of our information is accurate and robust. And that's why we have internal audit, and that's why we have an audit action plan to make sure that these figures we present at to the auditors in the when we submit the financials on the 31st of May are accurate and complete. The material adjustment we had in respect of the 18-19 financial year related to fines and penalties, where we disagreed with the AG on the treatment of that check. We didn't disagree on the figure. We said we wanted to write off that figure, the fines and penalties. The AG said you can't do that unless you show us that you have taken action to impair that figure first. You must show us that you have written the letters of demand and all that kind of thing before you just write it off. So it wasn't an issue of a wrong figure. It was an issue of the treatment of that figure, how we disclose it. Chair, we have the same issue with the irregular expenditure on ABIS. We're saying that expenditure is not irregular, but CETA has already agreed that it's irregular. Now, we can disagree then as long as we like, Chair, but at one point we must make a decision as a department, then agree that it's irregular, and then the committee is going to ask us, what disciplinary action have you taken? Then I'm saying, we're not going to take any disciplinary action because the mistakes were not made by us. It was made by CETA. But we'll come back to that one when we get there. Minister has dealt with the issues of additional budget for deportation. The transportation tender in place, Chair, no. We don't have that transportation tender in place yet. It's a transversal contract. National Treasury is in charge of that process. The evaluation process happened about 2 weeks ago. I stand under correction there, but that's my information. It's about 2 weeks ago the evaluation process happened. So at this point, we don't have internal bus contract for deportation yet. We received CARA funding, and we used that to buy vehicles, buckies and buses, or trucks, Chair, I think it's called trucks. We use trucks which you transport people with, and we use that to transport people from holding facilities to Lindela and to do direct deportations to ports of entry where relevant. Okay. Chair, I dealt with the I agree that the collection of fines is low, Chair. As I say, we need to work on that and improve our systems and things there. The future dates and the in progress on the audit action plan. Chair, most of these future dates are the 31st of March. That's when the financial year ends. Then we have some other future dates, which is the 31st of May. That's when we need to submit the financials. Now, I must confess, Chair, that in our IT environment, is still weak, and we will not be able to resolve all our repeat findings in respect of IT. We don't have a CIO appointed yet, but my colleagues can report on that one as well, Chair. So that's the situation on that one. Chair, there was a question as to whether we're going to defer the BMA budget to the next financial year. No, Chair, we're not. We plan to utilize the full BMA budget, and you'll see on the report, Chair, that BMA has only spent 12% of its 50 mil budget at the end of December. And there are reasons for that. It's because of the slow implementation of a BMA bill. We can't spend money if we do not have a bill. But we did write to National Treasury to get permission, because that money was earmarked. We did write to National Treasury to ask for permission to utilize that funding to cover other expenditure in the department, Chair. So that's what we will do. So we will spend the full allocation of BMA, even though if we spend it on things other than the BMA in the current financial year. In the next financial year, BMA has a budget of 68 mil, if I'm correct, Chair. So and that will then it's to enable them to get their operations going. That's what we'll do. If we need to allocate additional money, we'll have to have a discussion in the department and deal with it from that perspective and say there's a greater priority there. JB, on the disciplinary action on 30-day payments, where a person is found to have delayed a payment unreasonably, Chair, or beyond the 30 days or beyond what the timelines are prescribed, we write to the relevant DDG and say to that DDG, please take disciplinary action. Please also note that if you fail to take disciplinary action, you yourself commit an act of financial misconduct. That's in accordance with the guidance from National Treasury. So we can get that report back to the committee chairs if that's what you're required to say. This is a disciplinary action taken by the relevant DDGs in respect of their people who failed to pay their invoices within 30 days. But Chair, I'm also giving you the details. 12 invoices out of 3,000 invoices a month not paid within 50 days is not bad. But it's not 100%. And that's what we need to do. We need to get to 100%. And that's why we're not changing our targets to make it 98% or something easy to achieve. We're sticking to the 100%. Oh, sorry, Chair, the last is just a question from our honourable member from the EFF. The private leases and office accommodation, slide 56. Ma'am, you'll see that we're overspending on property, but that's because of self-financing. On self-financing, we also have an allocation for budget. So we must make plans to make sure that our offices get modernized. We do not receive sufficient money from National Treasury for this purpose, and that's why we use the self-financing allocation. That allocation is then used to modernize our offices, and we will make sure that our expenditure for property and leases are fully utilized by the end of the financial year. It's not an issue of our portfolio is about 60-40% split, 40% state-owned, 60% private leases. So we're trying to move away from private leases into state-owned land, but we have a dependency on public works, so if we can achieve that, then obviously we will reduce, and that's our aim as a department. We do not want to sit in private lease accommodation because it makes no sense at all, Jake, to modernize an office at great expense and then move 5 years later when the lease expires. That makes no sense to us. We should stay in the facility, and that's why we want state-owned facilities. The last question from Honourable Member Chair was also about COE pressures. We are moving money from goods and services to compensation of employees. In the new financial year, we are Treasury approved that we move 90 mil to compensation of employees. So Chair, I must say it's 90 mil minus 22 mil, because they increase our baseline with 90 mil, but decrease it with 22 mil in respect of COE, and that money comes from goods and services. So if we do not take measures to make sure that we utilize our full COE budget effectively and useful, we could run into a situation that our operations get affected because our wage bill is getting too big. So we are compelled by National Treasury to use or to adhere to the COE ceilings, and that's what we'll do. We'll continue to do so. We try to manage the department in a responsible manner so that we don't incur unauthorized expenditure, but we don't incur irregular expenditure. That's what we try to do. Which I think I've answered the questions.
The DDGHR, and just one question or two questions to deal with, and then immigration, and then I'm sorted.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. I have two questions to attend to. I think the first one was from Honourable Lizelle on the issue of cases and how many of them have been finalised. First of all, let me say, Chair, that not all the fraud and corruption cases will lend into human resource management misconduct cases. So for the ones that have come as misconduct cases, we have dealt with them, and 35 cases have been sorted so far, sorted as in finalized, but finalization does not necessarily always mean dismissal. So right now I do not have a breakdown of the different sanctions. I have a breakdown of how many were handled per quarter, but we can provide a written response in terms of all the different sanctions, because they come with different sanctions depending on the nature of the case. But I'll say that in quarter one, we finalized 21 cases. In quarter two, we dealt with 10 cases. And in quarter three, we dealt with 4 cases that have been finalized in total. There are still other cases that are still in progress and under assessment. And the second question was on the issue of the process of filling of the CIO. I think it's the Honourable Member that asked. Let me say that different DDG positions have been advertised as well as the DG position, and like the Minister said, the recruitment process has started. Unfortunately, sir, we cannot say now that who has applied and has not applied, but the process of recruitment is underway. It has commenced. Thank you.
DG, are you done? Okay.
Thanks, Jim. I'll proceed. Fortunately speaking, I've got very little left to cover, so I'm just going to pick up on the one or two issues which were left hanging over. I think it came from both Honourable Roos and as well as from Honourable Van der Merwe. The one question that you raised was around the asylum seeker statistics, so I'll just ran through some of the stuff which we got here quickly. In our last quarter three reporting, we gave an indication in terms of new applications that have been received for asylum seekers was 7,511, which will be an increase in terms of asylum seeker applications in terms of preceding years and months. So we've seen a bit of a progressive increase based on our previous reporting. The issue with regards to how many applications, Section 22 extensions, do we currently have in circulation, The number there is 186,210, but that will of course relate back in terms of looking at the Refugee Appeals Board and the Standing Committee. So those numbers will then tally back to that, the Section 22 obviously being an extension. But we deal with first applications, first adjudication applications for asylum seekers. We deal with about 98% of them in real time. And to give you a number on that, we are in 2018, we had 18,000, this is the end of 2018, so we're reporting 1 year back. We've still got to get our final 2019 numbers. 18,354, of which we finalized 18,104. That will give you a 98%. So that's the first level of adjudication that we deal with. So obviously if there's appeals, then that number will go further from there. The issue of the office has been managed. I don't need to respond back to those issues. There was a question, Honourable Ruiz, with regards to the inspectorate. There are indeed, you were talking about the truck drivers issues and what are we doing in terms of being able to investigate proactively in terms of businesses. So our inspectorate carries a quarterly target in terms of our APP. We have conducted in the last quarter, we conducted 50 different investigations that related specifically back in terms of businesses. The quarter prior to that we did 61, and these inspections are normally conducted in conjunction with the financial and staff of operation and the security driven operation. So those have been undertaken. Off the top of my head, most of those are done around the Gauteng area and the KwaZulu-Natal area over that time, and I think there might have been some in the Western Cape as well. My last issue which I need to deal with, and if I remember correctly, again, it was yours, Honourable Ruiz, is where are we at the moment as far as the VFS issue is concerned? We don't like to speak around the VFS tender that we're putting out. We talk about a permanent business partnership that we're running. The progress report that we've got on that is that we published an RFI, which went out, I think it was the end of November. We received our responses. We did a briefing in December. On the 2nd of December, we did a briefing to five different companies that showed interest. Those companies had up until the 17th of January 2020 in which they responded, and now we have got those responses in, and we are now busy doing a bid evaluation committee on that. I'd expect the bid evaluation to conclude somewhere between now and the end of March. That's just an estimation. In the meantime, in parallel to that, we've also engaged with National Treasury because we've positioned back to them, how do we address the process of the business partnership? And they have agreed that we can register a interest around a public-private partnership. So they have appointed somebody that we can now start to engage with at National Treasury level. That engagement will now commence, and we are into that space as well. So just in summary, the RFI did get the required number of respondents, and we are busy evaluating those respondents as we are talking now. I think that is mine, just quickly. Thank you, Chairperson. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Are you done, DG? Okay, sorry. Are we done from this side? Because I see new hands. Okay. I'll start with Honorable McLover, then Honorable Lekota.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't know whether it is formally done, but I must register my dissatisfaction with the unbearable heat in this place. Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether it's officially done, but I must declare my dissatisfaction and unbearable heat in this place, let alone the facilities was not working, and I think we must as a committee address it to the necessary channels. There are two questions of mine that has not been responded to, and I think it is a serious oversight. The underspend of Who Am I Online, there's no answer on that, and also the problem that we have with the backup system. That has not been answered, and that is a problem within the Home Affairs Department. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we were in the same venue last time, and we thought the aircon is not working here.
Then I went to Old Assembly where I had the next meeting. It was also not working. So, but it's a matter that you elevate. It's not that there is an agenda against this committee, Honorable Maklouf. Honorable Lekwata.
You will pardon me if the question I want to raise has been raised before. But as I remember it, the protocols of the United Nations make a point that if people run away from their country, say they're looking for refugee status and things like that, they cannot leave, say, Nigeria, cross Ghana, the DRC, Angola, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and come and ask for asylum here in South Africa. Now, I'm asking this question because looking around in this country, I cannot comprehend how it is that people come from as far as Libya, Somalia, and all these countries of North Africa and get here. Some of them come from China. You have to cross oceans and all of that. How did they manage to obviate all these other countries, and when they get here, it's the only country that they can get to be admitted in? Or what happens when they come into these other countries? Do they just get given passage, you know, go on to South Africa? That's where you are wanted. Because if it was always like this, it would mean that lots of these countries north of us should be overflowing with refugees that have been welcomed there, authorized even to move on to the next countries. What is it that the other countries are doing that we are not doing that makes it possible for them to get the people there and pass them on to us? I really would like to hear what the department can say to us on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lekwata. Honorable Chan? Okay. Can I invite responses? We're running out of time.
Honorable Lekwata.
No, thank you, Chair. On the issue of the under expenditure on Wayo, I just want to indicate to Honorable Maklouf that what happened is that, Chair, when the project started on who I am online was what now we call a modernization program. And when that project under the previous service provider that was appointed, there was a definitive agreement in 2010 where there was separation. There was an agreement that scope should be implemented. That is why we are implementing it as the part of the modernization. Then the budget that was allocated by National Treasury on an annual basis now, we are utilizing that budget for various things. One, for systems development. If we are developing a new module like your e-visa, we're utilizing that money for system development. Secondly, we're utilizing that money to pay license fees on an annual basis. We also utilize that money to procure hardware infrastructure. So that is why in that particular quarter, there was an under expenditure in relation to the payment of some of the licenses and so forth. So it's not that, you know, we're not spending that money, you know, correctly. The second issue, you raised the issue that there were issues relating to allegations of corruption. Those, obviously, talking 2009, 2010, you know, issues that were raised. But in the definitive agreement, obviously, for an example, Chairperson, there was an amount of money that was prepaid to a service provider. So we are busy. So the agreement was that with that money that was paid to Kijima, for example, we're still utilizing today. They are servicing our ports of entry, and we're not paying them a cent because we are still reducing that particular amount that was prepaid. So those are the issues, I think, that I just want to indicate to Honorable Maklouf in terms of how we're dealing with that particular issue relating to the Wayo budget. whether it will be finalized this year. Obviously, the scope should have been finalized, but obviously, as we have said, that in the IT environment, we're running a lot of challenges in relation to resources, so we have not been able to complete the modernization scope as it was envisaged when when this particular project started. We still have the asylum seeker module that is outstanding. The e-permit or e-visa was one of those that was outstanding. The trusted traveler, you know, it's one of the trusted travelers, the e-gate project. So those are the projects that are outstanding that we need to complete. And once we've completed that, we can then say the entire suite of the scope has now been completed. But we are on track to be able to complete that, Chairperson. It might not happen in this calendar year, but definitely in the next year or two, we should be able to complete the scope. Thanks.
The issue raised by Honorable Lukota about the United Nations Convention of 1951, the principle I'm talking about is called the first safe country principle. That, you remember, when you are an asylum seeker or you are applying for refugee, in terms of that convention, you must come from a country that, number one, is at war, or number two, you are being persecuted for various offenses, including your political views and activities, your religious affiliation, your traditional beliefs, etc., etc., or even your sex orientation. Now, they say when you are running away because of those things, the first country you arrive with, which is safe, you utilize the first country principle and stay there. Unfortunately, that's not working. At least on the African continent, nobody's applying that principle. It just gets ignored completely. And we have not tried to follow it up. Now, the question you asked about why, what is that which is different? Well, the simple answer is people want to come here. They want to come to South Africa, not to any other country. One of the members of the Diaspora Forum was asking TV sometimes last year why, and they said, no, we target in South Africa because they've got very good progressive laws and they've got a lot of rights which don't exist in many other countries, and that's why we're going there. At least I'm answering from what I've heard on TV. I'm not giving an answer which is certain from us or that we know exactly the reason. But the first safe country principle, I can assure you, is not being used. Not at all, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, Minister, and the DG and the Deputy Minister and the team. We are going to move to the next item. I would like to thank the department, and that, you know, as a committee, we don't take very light the work that we are doing. And we know for a fact that the Department of Home Affairs is a peculiar department. It's different from Department of Education and Department of Health. You know, if you are looking for health, if you don't get joined in the government, you can go to private hospital. If you don't get joined the Department of Education, you can go to a private school. But with regard to Department of Home Affairs, we have nowhere to go. So it is very imperative and important that we'll have to improve the system. So, and I'm sure all the questions that members are asking are on the basis that we are a very important department and we need to improve the system. We need to up the game in terms of attending to what the majority of our people are looking for. The next item will be presented by Mr. Adams next to me. And he has just promised what is going to take 5 minutes. So I think members will assist me to make sure that it's 5 minutes. Those who want to leave may leave from the department, but because it's speaking about issues that relate to the state of the nations at rest, it may be important that the Deputy Minister and the Minister and the Acting DG draw some lessons from what he has analyzed. Over to you, Adams, and 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. So for the members who arrived a little bit late, we have the honor after several years of now having been appointed with a researcher to assist the committee, so we have additional capacity. So this was prepared primarily by the researcher, but I'm going to present because he's still new. But on Mr. Hlingwen is in the back there, Pakamile, and so you can make contact with him. So just a brief overview. I'm going to just look at the first section of this document, the first two sections of this document, rather than going to the comparison with the previous years. But although there was no direct mention made of the Department of Home Affairs by the President in this year's speech, there are some indirect implications from various larger recommendations by the President that will have an impact on our sector. So this document you can read through in more detail. Obviously, it's been submitted to all members. It might assist in your debate in the coming couple of days. So the economic development, growth, and investment was one of the primary mentions in the State of the Nation address, and the importance of home affairs in that regard is obviously to ensure that the attraction of investment is supported through improving access to permitting and visas into the country. We also in turn have the African Continental Free Trade Agreement coming into effect this year, which will have implications for the movement of Africans in and out of the country, which are much of our primary trade partners, and Home Affairs will need to assist in that regard. There's already a number of visa waiver agreements signed by government with various partner countries, and they're busy being signed into agreements, and these will also need to be facilitated by Home Affairs. The Border Management Authority Bill is obviously now also in place, which will hopefully kind of facilitate and improve efficiency in the trade and tourism sector, but also the risk potentially is that the increased security in that bill could have a negative impact on tourism flows, as there was some concern raised around the regulations in the past where the focus on security had a negative impact on tourism and trade. So the concern, or the committee will need to make sure that security doesn't come at the expense of tourism and trade. So we'll monitor that over the department. Then the marketing and strengthening of tourism, so it's again similar kind of implications for Home Affairs, that we should fast track and improve the efficiency around that. A number of initiatives now are mentioned in the quarterly review that the department is already working on, including the advanced biometric movement control system, where there were some delays in implementing in the previous financial year and also now some delays this year. So the full rollout of that system hasn't been kind of implemented throughout the country yet. So there's a number of trials in place, but that will need to continue to be monitored, and will improve efficiency around the border in the border environment, which will in turn facilitate more efficient processing of tourists and business people into the country. In addition to the e-visa and the e-gate measures, which are being implemented but also need to be expanded upon. Combating corruption and strengthening the rule of law is again something that all departments will need to continue to focus on. The department is involved in a number of different operations, as was mentioned, including the Visa Messina, which also seeks to intensify the fight against fraud and corruption. And the modernization program, which also has security implications and fraud prevention implications, has had some delays, as was mentioned in the responses now recently. So we need to just keep on monitoring that those delays do not inhibit the counter-corruption and strengthening of rule of law, and we'll continue to push for that systems integration to be implemented. Another big project that's coming up is the overall observe and port. Members will remember the President mentioning this in turn will have an implication for Home Affairs needing to up its capacity or its functional support at the Durban port. They already had a trial kind of at the Cape Town harbour where they integrated various government departments, which is a trial project which will lend some support to the Border Management Authority. And so they'll potentially expand that to Durban Port now with the extra expenditure there. And then lastly, energy supply. Obviously, as one member has mentioned, the load sheddings have an impact on all service delivery, and particularly DHA, which already has problems with its systems being online all the time, now having to struggle with power supply. And if such things continue, then the consideration will need to be given to uninterrupted power supplies for more offices, particularly in high volume traffic offices, as well as looking into measures to provide for systems to be available offline, so that you don't have to have a constant internet connection to service basic functions. So they're going to need to look at methods to address the offline functionality when they provide services. Then the rest of the document just basically says what issues have changed and what are new emphases on the president. So it will go more into the comparison of last year's and this year's State of the Nation address in terms of the major trends affecting home affairs. But I'll leave that to members to look into if they're interested.
Thank you, members. Any comment? But the document is as circulated. You all have the document with you. Honorable McLuhan.
Chair, I must say thank you for the opportunity and also for that presentation. And I just want to say that, and perhaps the minister should listen to what I'm saying. As members of parliament, we are doing oversight, not investigation. We are not AMA police. When we come back, we report to this committee on oversight, not an investigation. So it is very good, and we as members take note of what is presented, and we will execute our oversight duties to ensure that what is presented to us will take place. Thank you. I know the minister didn't listen now.
No, thank you. I think the meeting has run so well, and we're about to close on a very good note. So the minister was indeed listening. That matter, Honorable Makuba, you could have raised it outside with the minister, because I'm happy with the way the meeting has run today. And I want to thank the minister and the entire department, and thank members for the contribution. I think it is meant to enhance the service delivery and the work the department is doing. And with those few words, the meeting stands adjourned.